It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
For another Tyranny Report with Dr. Frank Tamburi. Oh, yeah, we got him, you know, live. We're, we're live now. This is being recorded to play tomorrow, the next day, where we'll schedule it in. But I tell you, right now on LRN is playing a show that I've been trying to get on this whole freaking week, and it's coding problem. Anyway, it got fixed. So it was Dr. Huber that Dr. Frank Tamburi hooked me up with, and it was a good show going on right in the middle of it. All of a sudden it went dead, and it was because the studio thought it was dead air, and we were recording it was fine, and they pushed a button, and I'm like, all right, we gotta fix this thing. I know a lot of the people, you know, get entertained with all of the, you know, run around with our hair on fire trying to make everything a live show. It's a live show. That's why I keep trying to convince Donna it's a live show. There is no later. It's right freaking now, you know. So now with the not a live show, maybe we can chill a little bit. So what we're going to do is we don't have the annoyance of commercial interruption. I mean, it's kind of fun. We got to go to break and come back and so on. But it's, you know, we do music and everything. But I get to play with that now, and I get to do some editing. So a 3-hour show edits down to 2 hours anyway. So if I do a 2-hour show, then I get to do an hour of editing. You know, we can get creative and have some fun. So we're going to try that. We may go back to the live show after we get off the road. But, you know, with Love Bus and internet connection the way it is and so on, this is working out better. And for Dr. Frank and I, it's like a continuous after show, which we do a lot. So this is it's going to be fun. So, Frank, now what we may do is we need to take a break, which is not a big deal here. I can just edit it together, but because his father's visiting and they're getting ready to pack, go to airport and everything going on. You know, I know your dad. You know, how's he doing?
Oh, he's doing good. It's been a little, you know, transition. Like many people, you know, they're leaving blue states for red states. Now, my dad has been out to, I mean, he's been in here in Arizona back in the 70s and 80s. That's how I have such an affinity for Arizona myself. But he's been in Pennsylvania the last like 20 something years, 30 years. And I'm sorry, Pennsylvania has been there the last 20, 30 years. And he's just like, he's just fed up with it. He's fed up with all the changes and the towns around him and the taxes and the crime. You've got the Philadelphia issue. Now, he lives out in the boonies outside of Philadelphia. But, you know, with all the changes happening in these blue states, he's done. One of the problems he had was he wanted to sell his house and come out here. Thing is, he had this beautiful house, a prepper house. We even tried to advertise with prepper groups because it was all self-contained. I mean, it had like, it was hardly any energy bills, everything. I mean, you had the hot water was almost nothing. You had, you know, salt, the whole house was solar. You had, you know, the window panes were like triple pane for insulation. You had all this land. I mean, everything custom made because the guy's an engineer. And he couldn't find anyone that would be willing to pay it. And and we're talking dropping prices because nobody who was a prepper, people understood the problems of the world, why they would want that house, wanted to move to that area, to Pennsylvania. Do you see my point? In other words, everyone who could appreciate what that house was and what it represented were leaving the whole state. So that was the crazy thing. So we have pieces of crap homes in Arizona that were going for like twice the money. And you have beautiful homes like that that a prepper would love that he could even get offers on because everyone's leaving Pennsylvania. So that's been the big issue overall, the kind of more the meta that affects all of us, you know, the people listening to the show. So finally, he was able to sell it, not exactly of what he wanted, but came out here, and we have our, you know, certain properties out here, and I think, you know, turning the corner, the corner here as far as you know, getting out of that world. And I think he's getting happier just being out here. You know, and we'll have to talk off the air about some of the areas in which you're in, and hopefully maybe Ernie and Donald will be a neighbor sometime soon. We also have a patient, one of my patients, and he and his daughter are expert chicken wranglers. Like they have the gourmet chickens and the French special chicken and this and that. So they're going to be coming up and helping us do the whole chicken thing and all the details. And we've got the water on, and we have electricity, and, you know, anyway, it's a process, which I'm sure that many of you out there know. It's an ongoing process, but you have to just take your time and you have to enjoy it at the same time. But yeah, that's the deal. And he's going back, and he'll be back in a few weeks.
Okay. I want to share this with you, and it'll play tomorrow. The interview that I did with James Corbett last night, and it was probably one of the biggest revelations that I've had ever. I mean, the great enlightenment. And I want to share it with you, and I'm sure it'll make a lot of sense. But I want this to be the basis of our conversation today, because there's a lot of news going on and everything, and it's all manipulation. And you know, it 30 years of doing this, and I finally got the game plan, and it's just so simple. But I needed to fill in a piece, and I'm going to tell you the story. You ready?
Sure.
Yesterday, in preparation for the show, I was listening to some of Corbett's stuff. He does other interviews, and he, you know, has new material and so on. And I was kind of going through that. And I only was in a couple of minutes of a show he did with another young man that, I don't know, some, you know, regular interview that he does. And they mentioned a show. They were referencing a show he did 7 years ago in 2014 about China, and it's CorbettReport.com/China. And if you watch that document, it kind of goes into, you know, things that it kind of dovetails into a bunch of other stuff that he does. Cause he's always these particular groups of people since the 1800s have, you know, dusted off the Illuminati control people book of whatever the hell, you know, and it's all a psyop thing. How, you know, it's Machiavelli, how to rule people kind of thing. And this has been crafted over the millennia to just, you know, herd the cattle and the people, you know, they're all the same thing. You got to have some livestock to take care of your livestock for you. So this is, kind of the background. I understood that, and I could, you know, understand that. What role does Russia, China, Europe, the New World Order, the World Economic Forum, you know, who's in charge? Which one is competing against whom? How is that working? Now, if, you know, their preference, of course, was to be the one top guy in charge of everything. Well, you know, that's kind of been the dollar. And then they, you know, Klaus Schwab comes out and says, yeah, the dollar has had its reign and, you know, it's unfair and it needs to go away. We need to have, you know, GoldmanSachs.gov coin or something. So all this stuff is playing out. And then I heard reference to a thing that, because of what's going on in the South China Sea, you know, we're almost at war with everybody all the time. And I'm going, yeah, and aliens. I'm going, man, they're going to have to pull the aliens out of their butt sooner or later. You know, they get everybody together. That they're building up to that. I can feel it, you know, and I'm going, okay. And they referenced the show that he did. And I remember listening to that a long time ago. And I'm going, yeah, there was, you know, some good stuff. So I just stopped that podcast and went to his documentary on China. Then it all started to make sense with one little thing. It was an hour, 17 minutes. I made it like 38 minutes through. And then I had to do the show with James, but this is what I, the epiphany that happened. In China, they had Yale in China, Yale University, Yale. All of a sudden, for whatever reason, they got to have a branch or something, an office of something in China. Well, this is Yale's where Skull and Bones came out of, and it's multi-generational. It's like Prescott Bush, George Bush, Baby Bush. I mean, it's had all these guys, and it has roots in different populous areas or empires or large swaths of we need to rule, be it Russia, which later became the Soviet Union, the billions of people in China, all the if you do Russia and China, you got, I don't know, 20-something, 30% of the land mass and, you know, half the people, you know. So it's always been Eurasia has been the target of life. You listen to the commentary and quotes from all these guys trying to rule the planet. It was always why Afghanistan is such a big deal, and Ukraine and Turkey, and all. It's the gateway between Europe and Asia, Eurasia. It's always on the road to India. You're going through Afghanistan, British Empire, and what they've been doing, and why empires go to Afghanistan to die. And all. It's all about control of resources, land mass, and people. And so all this is not new to me. What was new to me was that you could see that Mao Zedong was a young guy in the middle of whatever that they could control, just like they did with Lenin and the support of industrialists here in America, of support of Hitler and Mao Zedong coming in. And then Chiang Kai-shek, you know, leaving, that was supported by a lot of American interests that went to Formosa, which was Taiwan. Well, this Taiwan, you know, China's always wanted to get Taiwan back in the crowd. Well, all of this coming together, and then I started to understand it was all the same people doing the same thing for the same reason. This is the epiphany. The people that had the means, because they can, if they can, they're going to, whatever they're going to do. And because they could, they had the means, this is what they did. They were supporting collectivism, communism, fascism, socialism, whatever ism around the world so that you could have a unified collective to control, but also they did it because they knew it didn't work. They didn't want these vast numbers of people with resources and land to be free. If you gave them a Declaration of Independence, when the writings of like John Locke was like the discovery of gravity, you know, there was an article that had a big influence on me in the 90s. And the point that they were making was, is that the discovery of you own yourself, that you're not property or livestock of the king, that philosophy of self-ownership, and that if you're going to have a government, its purpose is to protect those rights, or why do you have them? If you're not going to have your land ownership protected, if you're not going to be able to say this is mine and not yours, you know, if they're not there to help you protect your claim on your property, then why are they there? You know? So this is just like the discovery of, you know, Newtonian physics, man. I mean, you know, it was all of a sudden, this is a great thing that made it to the new world. So the concept, this took hold in Common Sense by Thomas Paine and The Cause and the Declaration of Independence, and that individual humans should, you know, be free and own themselves and all this other stuff. Well, it, you know, and from that you get, you know, anti-slavery, you start, you know, rights, do they apply to women or even children, or, you know, I mean, it just expands from there. And that concept is the threat. So when you have a country like North America becomes free from that, at least in our mindset, and you're able to go out and have pretty good property rights for a long time, that it's your land and they have all this precedent of what the government can't do, and they're there to keep, you know, the local tyrant away and protect your Bill of Rights, all that kind of stuff. That concept, that infection into the mind of humanity, is the threat. So what they did is they, of course, benefited from this enormous engine that created stupendous wealth for these people and the country. But what they wanted was control. It's all been about control. So the rights of the individuals, the pursuit of happiness of, you know, the citizens of America, all that was just window dressing. That's to get, yeah, no one's more enslaved than those that think they're free, you know? So what they were doing is certainly it got going in earnest late 1800s. You have Cecil Rhodes wanting to bring the U.S. back into the British Empire. And you go, okay, I get that. But why? What do they care? I mean, I never really could understand it. The epiphany was these people that had a lot of power. There's that, you know, a few hundred or certainly not more than a few thousand now that have all these resources. They targeted, and I saw it at a lower level in Arizona. And do you remember the writer for the Republic? It was a columnist named Mike Ruelas. Do you remember that guy?
No.
Mike Ruelas was a columnist that I didn't, he and I just went at it all the time. He couldn't, I mean, he'd do the story and it was always a spin on whatever we were doing. And I didn't really care because whatever, any press is good press. And you can, you know, say, you know, tie-dye wearing, dope smoking, gun-toting Ernie Hancock libertarian says this about that. I mean, he was definitely one of those guys. And I'm just like, yeah, whatever, just print it. So what I realized when he retired is that he was selected as a reporter for the state, which was the state newspaper, Arizona State University, ASU, has its own, like any university has their own newspaper. Well, he was a writer for that, and he was plucked from that to be a columnist at the Arizona Republic. A lot of people think that these people, they get into media, and then they turn into communists and their socialist agenda. They, you know, see, well, some people are breaking away from that. A lot of people that are the useful, you know, anchors or whatever. They're, you know, like, what's her name? Carrie Lake from Fox there in Arizona, and a bunch of others are starting to leave, and Project Veritas is giving them an out, and they're all going, yeah, this all sucks, and I want out. But Ruelas was Ruela, R-U-E-L-A-S, I think it was. So Rick Ruelas was a selected individual because he already fit the mold. And that's what I was starting to see throughout the entire band of all the people that are still there at the Republic. There were good ones. There was a couple of guys I became friends with, and they would write story, and they, you know, twist it in such a way they get it in. They had to use a bunch of Ernie adjectives. But they really were more on support of libertarianism or freedom and truth and justice, American way, and so on. And it was clear that they didn't have a long career. They're done. And the worst of them are the ones that stayed. When he finally retired, and for a short time, he did PBS's Horizon, which is a daily kind of a news magazine, 30-minute thing or hour thing on Channel 8, the PBS station in Arizona, which I've been on a lot. And one of the producers is also a producer over at KTAR, or was, and he would have me come in to kind of fill in. That was his, you know, how he could, you know, slide that in there, right? Well, what I didn't understand is that there is a standard and agenda of how they select these people. And if you're caught, you know, continually, you know, challenging the official narrative, you're gone. And they'll put somebody else in and somebody else in and somebody else. Well, this on a small micro scale in Arizona, what was going on has been going on around the world on a consistent, constant basis to the highest levels. This is why you have, you know, Macron and, you know, France and Trudeau and Canada. And you go, who the hell are these people? And it was also what I tripped upon is you have to be able to get them in. No ifs, ands, or buts. No rolling dice, throwing darts, drawing straws, flipping coins. You don't let the people decide. You have to get in charge of the election process. You have to be assured that it's a selection, not an election. And what I didn't realize and what just dawned on me is that it's the same people that are doing this worldwide in every country. and the reason that they needed them to be an ist, collectivist, statist, communist, socialist, whatever ist, in Russia, China, and all of these European countries and everything, is because they knew it didn't work. By it not working, they weren't competition. Can you imagine a China and Russia that protected individual rights and put the power and the energy of those billions of people up against the wishes of the Western white man that they're going after? Now, of course, the very people that are doing the worst things, they will go, oh, it's Western white man, and they, you know, they need to be when it's the Western white guys doing it, you know. But it goes into their narrative that these stinky, you know, free market capitalists are the problem. They're not the problem. It's the crony capitalists that control it, the central bankers, the money, you know, reserve currency for the world. All of this that's going on, and it dawned on me after, you know, you watch enough Corbett videos, but a lot of stuff, and it was the Yale going to China and then them doing the same thing in the Bolsheviks in Russia. And I'm going, they're doing this on purpose. And now I understand why. They need them collectivized, not individual rights, not as the purpose of government and, you know, put on Team America flag, is that, you know, it's not even America first. It's individual Americans first, individual humans first. It's that the purpose of all of our discovery of how government's supposed to work is in the service of the rights of the individual. And that is their enemy, which means, as they've done and kept them humanity suppressed with collectivism around the world, that now the biggest threat to them is the middle class in America. And for the last year or more, they have turned their sights on, there was always the plan, that they are destroying the very thing that makes America and humanity great. Is individual rights, pursuit of happiness, property rights, and protection of your ability to express yourself. That is the enemy. And they have been fighting this war for generations around the world. And the only place left that is the bastion of freaking, we got to nip it, is America. And we are the target now. This is just beginning. And it has been happening all over the world. And now you and I are in the crosshairs. And once I understood that, now I know that we're on the right track. It's decentralization of everything. It's support of individuals' pursuit of happiness. And then now we have the evidence, and I pieced it together from all of this stuff, that that has always been the plan. That has been what's going on for hundreds of years, and certainly the last 100 years. And 150 years, and they're hammering on this idea. They have to get into this generation's mind that free market capitalism, for lack of a better word, or individual right promotion is the enemy of everything that they want to do. And here it comes. And they will do what they did in the Ukraine and do what they did in China, and they will starve us. They're trying to, but they're up against technology and our ability to feed ourselves on anybody living space. But it's coming, and a lot of people, like I always say, it always turns out to be a food thing. And it's because that is their biggest weapon. And here it comes to America. That was my epiphany.
Wow. Well, I mean, I would say I've kind of felt the same thing. I mean, it's I've seen it from but I would disagree in a large way with your theory there, which is I don't think it's planned at all. I mean, there's, you know, I mean, I'm not saying there's not an organization of ideas, but human beings are too selfish. They're too myopic, especially the selfish sociopath kind. You know, I mean, sociopaths don't think that many steps ahead. I mean, they do to try to, you know, to for their own self gain, but it's always self gain. I mean, they'll sit there and target and take down the next sociopath standing next to them. So, you know, it's never, in my opinion, this is not some grand conspiracy where everyone for generations and skull and crossbones and all this have had this whole thing planned out like some strategy. You know, so this being a strategy session, you know, things change. I mean, the winds of history change and times and technology and things change. But, you know, what you just tend to have is you know, greed and sociopaths, you know, to tend to rise to the top in certain areas. And it's just like a virus, like a poison that just starts to infect things. I think, you know, what you've talked about in the past, which is, you know, freedom always wins. Just gets messy beforehand, and you have to go through, you know, the tree of liberty being watered with blood of patriots every few years, I think is the quote. And I that's the cycle. It's the grand cycle. This is just a new version of it. I don't think it's been, you know, planned out for this long. I really don't. I mean, if you just take a look at leftists and the Democrats right now, I mean, they can't even agree how to do things. Yeah, you know, they're sitting there having fights between AOC, you know, people and the Bidens and others. But I think as a whole, that is kind of like the meta. It's sort of like the subconscious direction of this. You know, it goes towards centralized power.
I want to inject this. You know, it doesn't, because this is my immediate, you know, what I originally had planned on talking to James about was, you know, we're always kind of this Russia thing. It's always the China thing. It's always, you know, then we got the U.S. thing and the central bankers and on and on and on. And then here comes the World Economic Forum. Well, one in the founding documents of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, his father was a collaborator with the Nazis, you know, in Germany, you know, duh. And Klaus comes in, they do the World Economic Forum. And in the actual documents, if you look at the founding charter, that they've made it a hereditary kingdom king thing that on the board of directors will always be a Klaus Schwab descendant. This is how this stuff starts. You know, they set this up. And is there just them? Is it one group? Probably not. But I'm going, is there like an overlap between the people in Russia? Is there a Russian mob component? Is there, you know, the Tong, you know, in China kind of thing, or in the Orient what is it? And it's a philosophy. It's not necessarily a group, but one thing that they do know, they need to have collectivism and a government that is not there to protect the individual rights. It's there to surveil them. It's there to control them. It's there to get rid of dissidents. Course.
Of course, that's always been that way. There's nothing new. That's throughout all of history. The problem is people like Genghis Khan didn't have freaking internet. You know, I mean, so all you have are just different tools to do it. Before it'd be broadswords or samurai that would come to the farmland. And I mean, heck, and of course, I'll give you a quick example, you know, with martial arts, you know, with the martial arts, at least in Japan. You know, is that the feudal lords took over? They made it illegal to have any weapons. It was basically Second Amendment, right? They took away. You were not allowed, if you were a Japanese homeowner or whatever, you could not own a weapon. Can't have a sword, nothing. You'd be killed immediately if you had any weapon. And the samurai would come to town every once in a while and just survey and check out whatever. And what would happen was the farmers began to use farm tools. They would use a bow staff, you know, which is what they use to hold water over their neck, you know, two things of water, right? They would use a kai, which is something that they use to knock down corn. You know, they would use different what people call nunchucks, which is actually called nunchuckus, and those are actually used to just flail rice. So they would sit there and just bang the rice to get the husks off. And eventually, these guys would just be doing it for hours and hours and millions of hours during their life. They got so good at doing it, they start flipping these things around, and they started to make them as weapons. And of course, when the samurai would show up, they would just act all nice and peaceful, but they were using farm tools as weapons. And then the martial arts, the kata, where they would start to do these, you know, if you guys know what katas are, or Koreans call them forms, you know, then when you're kind of fighting invisible enemies, you know, it always seems kind of odd to people today. Like, you know, that doesn't seem like real fighting, but that was a way to mask the fighting. It was a way to practice without actually, you know, blatantly sparring, because if you were sparring, it looked like you were preparing for war. So they found ways to dress up their fighting styles as dance moves. So all of this was subversion in order to fight back. So that's just another example. This has happened throughout history and time. I think what I'm trying to get to, though, is that, you know, this is, I don't think it's anything new. I do think that, you know, it is kind of, it's two concepts. One is that it's a change in the culture that allows these sociopaths to for control, and they get control when the other side.
It's not a change. It's a direction.
Well, I mean, they're trying to direct it, but it only happens if the people allow it. There's always more people than there are people in charge, and so therefore you change the culture. That's why I always hammer about the culture issue and things that Americans take for granted. God knows it keeps coming the theme on this show, and I don't think you argue with me as much as you once did. But this concept, it's not just inherent. I mean, it's a culture that America has had for a long time, for a whole bunch of reasons we've explored on the show. And people say, we don't have a culture. I just flip out, because it's the culture of independence, the culture of being self-reliant, of giving the middle finger to the king.
That's being under attack?
This whole concept, of course, is under attack, because people are just lying down and not fighting back. And the thing is, it happens in attrition. You know, for instance, if a child unfortunately dies outside where he's riding his old tricycle and gets hit by a car backing up in their driveway, right? And the child was not wearing a helmet, you know, automatically, all of a sudden, all the moms come out. Oh, my God, how do we stop this from the future? I want my child's death to have meaning, and I'm not trying to take away from it. You know, they're in grief. So they go on a whole campaign to make mandatory helmet wearing, you know? And if you say anything against it, you're against the poor grieving mother and on. Or smoking bans. You know, if you want cigarette smoke at Chuck E. Cheese when your child's trying to eat pizza and play games, are you really that bad of an evil person, especially if you're a doctor? So this goes on and on. And so it's a concept of not understanding of what you're giving up, and also being self-reliant. You know, if you don't like smoking restaurants, don't go there. You know, the difference between private and public. This whole thing gets very, very, very detailed, but at the same time, it's very simplistic. I mean, and I think that the libertarians have understood this from day one. It's a concept of individual liberty and reliance. Okay, independence.
Wait, hold on.
So that's the first thing. Ernie, you'll go on for half an hour, then turn around and tell me that I ran. So I'm just saying, I just want to comment on this big picture you're talking about. So that's number one, that I think it's part of the culture changing, and a lot of Americans not relying on this or understanding this. My father was just here, as I said earlier, and man, he's really of the old world. I mean, I can't even tell you on the radio here of what stuff that he talks about. Not that he's an insurrectionist over things, but he comes from a world where, you know, if you hurt someone there, it's an eye for an eye. You know, it's the old Italian world, like Frank Sinatra kind of world. And that kind of concept seems to be gone. You know, there's such fear from the system today, from the people. So that's the first thing. The second big picture about why things are happening now is, I think that the world, the good people, the populace, not to mention Americans, I think what we're getting hit with, and why it seems like so quick, of course, this is with this technology. This technology has taken everyone aback. And the system probably was not even aware of the power of social media as one example. You know, the internet, radio, television, you know, this whole thing of communication, mass communication, is really a new concept. It's only been around, 100 years. That's it, 100 years, and the whole world now is changing, and the system, is taking advantage of that, and all of us. It's kind of like when something changes, like having a baby. You know, if the two of you, if a couple has been single or together with childless for many years, they have certain friends that are also probably don't have kids. They're partying, they're doing this, their lifestyle is a certain way. And the minute the child comes, everything gets shifted around. And it can be very dramatic, sometimes good, sometimes bad. But there's just massive changes that you often don't foresee. And that is what this technology has done. It's thrown everything off kilter, and the world is trying to find its new balance, this new homogeny, this new balancing of how that we all live as the world is shrinking and we're trying to interact with everybody. I mean, it used to be, you know, our worlds are private. Now every single thing is public. If the person puts on Facebook, or even if you don't, the government checking it itself. So there's so many levels. You know, what's ownership is copyright in the world of now the public domain of YouTube. There's so many things that we have to figure out, and we don't have enough. And we just haven't had the time to do it. And the system is taking advantage of it for right now. You know, and that's why social media and cancel culture have gone hand in hand. You know, we don't know how to deal with it. We're still, all of us are trying to figure it out, but they're taking advantage of it with this grand scheme. So anyway, I'm kind of rambling a bit, but it's an interesting concept. I just think that it's not organized from the top. There's certainly cabals and groups that are engineering for certain forces, but I think it's just unfortunately human nature, and the world at large is taken off balance with technology. And lastly, I do think this revolution will occur, but I don't think it's going to be in our lifetimes ultimately. I think it's going to be my daughter's generation, the generation that's going to be raised completely with computers and the internet and with these controls. They're going to really understand it differently. I think the fight will come from a more ground game of people who get it. You know, and unfortunately, the people who are our lawmakers today are all kind of late to the party, and we're coming from a prior world. I thought that the prior world would be enough to defend from the children of today that don't understand the rights that they're losing. That's what I kind of was thinking, and I hope that still happens. But I think it's going to have to be completely lost, and a whole new generation is going to have to be suffering through it, but understand the pros and cons of technology at its basal root. And that revolution will come in a different way after we've had time to really see this thing play out to all of its horrors. Anyway, that's it.
I got the answer.
There you go.
I'm there, man. I need to pull you along. You ready?
Go ahead. Trump, Donald Trump, 2024. There we go.
A side effect. You know, one thing we did, right. We were at Red Pill Expo, and James Corbett did a video that was his presentation, and it was by request of J. Edward Griffin, the author of Creature from Jekyll Island and all the stuff that he does. Right? And we had dinner with G. Edward a couple of days later after. We stayed just so we could hang out with him. And we've got a plan. You know, we're coming to Arizona. Arizona and Washington State are going to get our full attention. And we're going to have us some fun. If you're not thinking big enough, it's not worth the money and time and effort of a lot of the people that, you know, would support this kind of stuff. And G. Edward and I working together. So I'm, you know, I already knew what needed to be done. It's decentralization thing and the rights of individual and proper rule of government, defense of right, that kind of thing. That's always going to be a component. But, you know, what we were up against, it really didn't make sense. And if I can't convince you, I'm going to have a lot of problems convincing everybody else. Well, maybe not. I mean, because Frank's Frank. But, you know, I'm sure I can.
Thank you.
Now, this is, you know, because you're certain in your, you know, your revelation. So I know I'd have to play to your vanity. If I go, yep, Frank has been right this entire time. It's a culture thing. Okay. Now I'm going to play into that, and you can see that how it's being used, because you have been a big impact and influence on how I see a lot of this stuff through culture and media and, you know, comic books and movies and TV shows and everything. And you can see stuff and you go, that doesn't make sense that they would promote this crap and cancel that show. It doesn't make any sense as far as entertainment. It doesn't make sense as far as enlightenment. It doesn't make sense even as far as money. Why do they do? Who is doing that? What is doing that? So when you say it's not coordinated, it's not a single thing. Oh, it's coordinated. It may not be a single entity, but it has a single narrative. the narrative, even the people that think they're making decisions on everyone have been selected to be there for their philosophy. And you just, I don't have to micromanage it because you already have the philosophy that supports our narrative. This is right. The point I was making about Ruelas at There's a Republic. He wasn't made that way. He was selected because he was that way. And I didn't understand that until he retired and they had a party and they were going over his history and they're interviewing. And, you know, and then I even talked to him several times and so on. And I'm going, oh, I get it. I didn't know his history at the Arizona State University newspaper. He was selected because he was socialist. The Arizona Republic was not, and that's where Paul Schatt, that I knew, the editorial page editor, came to Arizona Breakfast Club, and he actually said these words. You need, I go, you know, how many weeks, just to be a dick, how many weeks is it going to take for the internet to replace the printed newspaper? Now, this is in the late 90s. This is way before they were worried about it or just on the horizon. And he goes, no, you need, he said this, you need a conservative newspaper like the Arizona Republic and a conservative editor like me to tell you what you need to know. And I go, wow. The word, the well, thought it, that he even thought he was conservative. But
Ernie, it's funny. You're talking about this now, and you just mentioned a few minutes ago, you referenced the Project Veritas with her name Ivory. I forget her last name. She's that blonde reporter. You did a study. I mean, matter of fact, talk about how great Tim Pool is. Tim Pool did a 2-hour interview with her yesterday. I mean, that's like real news now.
Okay, hold on. The biggest news story. Donna, yesterday, Tim Pool did an interview with that one reporter that was on Fox with the Veritas that, you know.
Yeah, it was great.
So yesterday, Tim Pool, that, you know, put that up right now and include it in the show notes for this, please.
And so there's a lot of highlights from it, but definitely check it all out. But I'll tell you, for those of you, I mean, if you don't know, the quickie story is that there was a young reporter. Yeah. She's kind of like in her 30s, and she was getting tired of kind of the micromanagement and everything Ernie was just talking about of the narrative that she had to follow. And it wasn't really about news. And it took her a while to really start to connect the dots, what was going on. It's basically, we're not trying to, it's like they just, if they hire you to have a certain mindset, then they're not controlling you. You're already controlled and don't know it. It's like a cult. And you just know inherently what to follow or not. And that's exactly what you said. She was, what flagged her, and there was a lot of things leading up to this, but was last year, she was sent out locally during COVID to talk to some doctors at this hospital. It was just, you know, like a regular local news program.
So she went out. The narrative. She,
right. Exactly. So this is just one of the many things, but it was a moment for her. So she starts interviewing this doctor. It was like the head doctor at the hospital or so. And she was asking what things that he was doing. And so he starts saying, well, we're doing this and this, we're giving vitamin D and whatever things. And then at the end, he just said, and he mentioned hydroxychloroquine. I mean, he didn't go on a whole rant about hydroxychloroquine. He just happened to mention it's one of the things that they were using. And she said, wow, so you're actually using this medication that the President Trump talked about. He goes, yeah, you know, he didn't want to focus on it. He was just saying, yeah, it's something we think could be helpful. You add zinc to it, it could be more helpful or whatever. So anyway, so she wrote up this article, and the title, she decided to give it a little flash. It was, you know, local hospital uses controversial medication for COVID-19, right? And so she puts that in the title. Well, then she was pulled into her like producer room and said, you can't use that. We can't have that in the title because, you know, and she was asking why. The idea was, well, President Trump is for it. So we have to be against it. Right. So anyway, so she turns around and she takes it out of the title. She did exactly what they asked, took it out of the title, but she didn't change what she wrote. So she still had at like the one of the last paragraphs, just mentioning what the doctor said, we're using these drugs and one of them happened to be hydroxychloroquine. Well, then she got yanked in and she was banned from her social media account. I don't know if it was her own personal or the one that's used through the local news. And they basically were angry at her that she put that in. And she said, I don't understand what you're angry about. You told me to take it out of the title. I took it out of the title against my own best judgment. I thought it would get more clicks, but I took it out. And they're like banging their head because in their mind, she's not wink, wink, getting the picture, right?
Exactly.
She did exactly what they asked, but they're like, you're not getting it, quote unquote. It's exactly what Ernie's talking about. And one last one, if you watch the podcast, the interview with Tim Pool, and I'm not going to do it here, he can speak for himself. But for those of you who wonder where Tim Pool comes from, he talks about where he came from Vice News. Tim Pool is one of the original founders of Vice News. He was hired. A lot of you guys don't know, but Tim Pool was a big, big rising star from his 20s, and all the media sites were trying to get him. He was like a first draft pick from the colleges.
Yeah, no, he was
time.
A skateboarding punk go around all the Occupy things from the street guy.
Occupy, yeah, he is, but he's kind of like a journalistic savant in a way. I really believe that. But for what it's worth, the media understood that Tim Pool was really a savant, at least from a journalist perspective. So they're all fighting to get him. So they gave him big money, and he was one of the founders of Vice. Anyway, he starts basically telling the similar, almost the same story, that they hire him, and he's doing X, Y, Z, and then he started bumping into them about certain things they wanted him not to report or things not to, or to take down. And he couldn't understand why, if certain things were factual, why not to report it? And what he started to realize, it wasn't about a specific fact or a specific thing. Nope. It was a mindset. It was the fact that it was not fitting into the mindset. And he didn't understand. To him, the mindset, there is no mindset. It's just facts are facts. I mean, this is news or it's not news. It's not thinking the way that you're supposed to. So you don't have to be micromanaged. You can just, they can let you go and you're following the narrative. Exactly what you're saying. And here we have more and more newscasters, including Carrie Lake here in Arizona, who probably might be the next governor. That would be cool. That's another story. But anyway, but that is what's happening. And we're seeing further now the demarcation, the balkanization, as I like the word I use on the show a lot, now of news. And lastly, Ernie, what we're seeing, I was trying to tell my better half, she was trying to ask what this was really about, or my dad was. I said, it's really about taking sides. Unfortunately, before you go into, and hopefully we don't have a hot civil war or anything, but you know, whenever you have a conflict, when the communication breaks down completely between two sides, what the next stage is, like the stages of grief, the stages are not about trying to convince the other side anymore. You know that the end is there when you don't even care about changing the other point of view. It's about trying to get everyone in the middle to take your side because the communication's broken down. It's kind of like having a couple that's got marriage problems. You know, they're trying to go to counseling. Everyone's trying to be good. But when it finally breaks down, where it's basically F you, and we're gonna have a divorce attorney, and neither side is talking to each other, the next step, unfortunately, winds up being trying to see which friends that each side can keep, which is unfair to everybody, the friends, family, and that's, I'm sure all of us have gone through this to some degree. And that's what's happening now. So you have each side now is not even listening to the other side. It's all basically organized. How many people in the middle can we bring to each side? And one of the things that my father was arguing about, because he comes from an old world, he's like, why isn't there more anger and people responding back and like an eye for an eye? And my thing is that the people on the right, libertarians, I think most patriots or most Americans, we're trying not to wrestle with the pig. You know, there's an old saying in the Bible, an eye for an eye makes everyone blind, right? And at what point do we devolve to their side? And trust me, it's very tempting. You want to do that. I tell some of my lefty friends, also, how would you like it if the right would ban people on the left? You know, and of course, they don't even understand that concept. You know, they're so self-righteous. But at some point, do we go to that level? And I know it seems for many of us in this audience, it's like, why aren't we doing it now? I think the advantage that the regular America still has is the moral high ground. Once you lose the moral high ground, then it gets harder to convert the people in the middle, or at least to win over.
You have to even know what that moral high ground is. I mean, I'm defending the moral high ground.
Well, I think
they're
seeing that's what Ivory's doing. Yeah, but that's what we're seeing with people like Ivory and Carrie Lake and others, the people that were speaking to the people in the middle. Look, no one listening to freaking Freedom's Phoenix, I can guarantee one thing, watches local news. Any of you listening, if you listen to local news, I think there's something wrong with you. Of course, no one's listening to local news.
Who does?
To Freedom's Phoenix. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, exactly. Well, no, the middle America, the milquetoast fence sitters, those are the ones that do. And those are the ones that will divide or basically lean this country one way or the other in mass regarding elections and the culture. That is why it's important. The people in the middle that we usually ignore, flyover country politically, those are the people that will define the direction this country goes in.
Okay, this is during all that, I know the audience is like, "Oh, Ernie, man, you know, come, all right, here's your red meat, all right." Get out of the idea that there is a Republican, Democrat, left, right component to this. There isn't. There is those that support the narrative and those that do not. Those that have their social credit score go up and those that have it go down according to the guys that set the narrative. What would be, that's why in a lot of the pirate letters that we had, you know, your rap sheet from the Crown is like a, you know, a good resume, you know, to me. I mean, you know, he wouldn't, you know, have a driver's license. I mean, he always, you go to court and I a couple of friends I've had where, well, he drove on an expired driver's license. He believed that he had the right to travel without a driver's license. He must be a bad guy. I mean, it's the narrative. They push this all the time. I've been dealing with these guys in politics, not understanding what was physically wrong with them. There was something wrong with them. And when 2015 started, and we're getting into the Trump report, and we're doing the campaign, we're going, and that's where the sociopath next door and Frank explaining that and doing a little reading and watching some videos on the definition between sociopath and psychopath. I'm going, holy crap. That was a big epiphany for me. I'm going, okay, now I understand what I've been dealing with. These people don't have the capacity for compassion and love. Either it was beaten out of them at a certain time in childhood, they were exposed to whatever, the punishment and reward was such that, or they just physiologically don't have that part of their brain working, which is what percentage of the people, Frank?
4%.
4% of the people.
That's,
you know,
a hell
just,
of a lot.
Just can't, 4 out of 100. That means, you know, and they all go and become politicians. There's not enough. 4% of America is what? Millions? You know, it's like 10 million people, you know, are out there freaking nutsoid, you know, and whether they're nuts or functional or not, they don't have the same capacity to have the same emotions that we do. You know, a little child gets squished, somebody kicks a cat, hell, it's them kicking the cat. You know, it's just, you know, what they don't think the same. So once I realize that, I go, and I know where a bunch of these people are too. I've been meeting with them all the time going, what the hell? And if I'm in a position of influence in politics, certainly when I was county chair and so on, they'd nuzzle up to you and kind of, man, no, you can be part of, and you know, all this can be yours. And we think of some people in even libertarian, you know, politics that, you know who I'm talking about, that are like this. They just see an opportunity and they take it, you know, and I'm going, wow, this is a sickness. There's something there. Well, the narrative has to be supported. And when you say, who's the person that's calling down to the producer at the local Fox affiliate and saying they're not going with the narrative, they're not doing it right, therefore you're in trouble? No, they're already picked that way. They already know. They go to conferences. They go to, you know, legislative, you know, meetings of women in government, or, you know, the legislative council of the blah, 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 the World Economic Forum or whatever. You don't make it there unless you're already that way. Unless you're supporting that narrative, you're not in there getting. And I give this example a lot. When I was at Air America, you know, the liberal bastion of whatever, as their token libertarians, Charles and I, you know, I get approached by Alanovo, which was in 05 is the beginning of kind of like an Amazon for social purchases. You know, this company gives great health care to their employees. This company doesn't use cobalt, you know, that's sourced from little African kids doing whatever. This company doesn't make, you know, sneakers in China with slave labor. Now that's okay now. I mean, they don't give a crap anymore. But, you know, they wanted to be able to socially and economically engineer society with wallet voting, which I was totally cool with it. But they wanted to set the criteria. And I go, why would you do that? I want to set my own personal criteria. I will endorse your effort, put ads on Freedom's Phoenix, make a big deal out of it on my radio show, if you give me the criteria that I get to determine. I may pick a lot of yours. I may not. You know, mine might be quality over healthcare. I mean, you know, whatever it is. They go, that's a good idea. We should do that. And this was a guy that used to be a, you know, head mucky muck over at Oracle. Well, he goes, good idea. They put it in. Boom. His venture capital went away. They wanted their narrative. They didn't want individuals setting the criteria by which they would make a purchase. They wanted to dictate it. Then you start getting into these funds, these mutual funds or whatever, that they buy certain stocks that support their narrative. You come to our narrative, we got cash for you. You enslave people on social media a certain way and give us access to the data, we got cash and support for
Ernie, you. Ernie, so Tim Pool, by the way, I just sent you and Donna the link. Not to the entire Tim Pool Ivory.
I think Donna already put it up. Did you already put up that Tim Pool thing?
I just sent it.
On the front page, done.
No, okay. I'm just saying I just sent it like 30 seconds ago. And it's a more abbreviated link. Instead of 2 hours of the interview, it's like the key, like 15-minute part. So if you want, you can put it.
He sent you an abbreviated version. Add that embed to the story that's already there.
I just texted anyway, but one of the things that Tim Pool said, I believe left this one out, when he ran into the same problem where Tim Pool was asking, you know, about why he was getting demerited and being challenged when he was hired to do Real News, and he was doing that, and that's when he started realizing that, you know, his brain wasn't formed properly for them and the thing we talked about. So finally Tim Pool said, he goes, you know what? We got like a year or so in this contract. I don't think this is for me. I want to do Real News. I don't want to be having these problems. So Tim Pool goes and he says, can you release me from the contract? You know, and they were like, well, you know, they didn't want to release him because you guys have to understand, Tim Pool is such a big name, at least in the liberal journalistic world. They didn't want him gone because it would look bad for them.
Why? What was it about him? Why? What do they care?
I don't know. I don't know. Why? Ernie, I don't come from that
because
world.
Because he saying. Had metrics. He had a large audience.
No. And no, Ernie, he didn't have an audience. He had no audience. You're not hearing me. This is before his YouTube. This is when he got out of college or whatever. He was just making a name for himself, but he was like getting awards with journalism schools and whatever. He was considered like a savant. Like I said, he's like a first round draft pick and everybody wanted him. And Vice News got him with the promise that he would develop a whole new platform and he'd be rich and be able to have full control over it. He was one of like three founders or at least three people put in charge.
He had skills. He had something they wanted.
Anyway, you missed the point. The point is they got him. They assumed he was with the program because everyone was touting how smart he was. And he came from that. He's a young millennial coming from the college system. They just assumed since he was at Occupy Wall Street, that he was thinking like an anarchist, like a leftist, like some guy that would be sitting there now burning down Seattle. They just assumed he came from that mindset because he was at Occupy Wall Street, forgetting the fact that plenty of libertarian Ron Paul people were at Occupy Wall Street, you know, who were not burning down cities. But I digress. The thing is that when they hit that crossroads and they were trying to get him to go along, and he's like, look, you know, I don't want to be forced in what to think. He said, can I get out of my contract? They didn't want him out of the contract because it would look bad because everyone knows who Tim Pool. I mean, now a lot more people know about him now. But back then, it was only the people on the left. They didn't want him out. So all of a sudden, get this. He tells a story on the link you just have. He goes, all of a sudden, he was informed. He goes, we have some big news we got to talk to you about. And he thought he was going to get fired. Instead of getting fired, he was told that he was getting a bonus. $40,000 was directly put into his bank account as a bonus for no reason. It wasn't Christmas. It was just, oh, you did a good job. We're giving you a bonus. And that was when the real alarm bells went on. That is who we're dealing with. That, I mean, it should be a surprise, but to have Tim Pool, of somebody of his stature, actually talk about it,
it's
directly on
everyone.
The air, $40,000.
This is what I'm talking about. It's right. The same thing with the Rubin report. You know, Ruben was the Young Turks, and he's gay and, you know, good looking and talented and everything. And all of a sudden, he just a little bit too libertarian. And what happened? They're like, oh, no, you're doing it wrong. And they come after him. They invest all of it because they believe. And I've been on the recipient end of this. And I've had, you know, I can name all kinds of names that, especially in the 90s, it was, oh, Ernie, man, you're up and coming. We're going fuel only. And I'm going, no, because I can see what they were doing. You know, it was evil stuff. If you will only support this narrative, and my narrative was Declaration of Independence, the proper role of government, defense of individual rights. Because I have stuck to that, it has made me pariah in everything. Advertisers that would boycott entire stations. Because I would, all the stations that I went to, I was, you know, they were low on the totem pole. KXAM, who the hell were they? KFNX, who the hell were they? You know, KPHX, who the hell were they? Until I go over there and they start rising up. And then they go, woohoo, man, we're going to ride this pony. And then, oh, nope, we'll advertise if he's not there. We don't, nope, we're not going, we would, but you got Ernie there. We got, yeah, but, you know, I'm the one that brought him to the dance. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, we need you, or we need to get control of your archive, or we want you to not talk about that, or say, you know, then fire me. You know, I'm done. And then I go to another station or whatever. And the thing is that I could see what was happening. I'm always, you know, at the low end of it, and then it would build up. And then I go to another low end, and it build up. And then finally you kind of, you know, screw them and you just go internet and where it doesn't matter. So the same thing happens with social media. It's how you get up on, they go to PewDiePie. At the time he had 60 million subscribers to this guy commenting on crap while he's playing freaking video games. And they go, oh, no, 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 no. You got to be in the club. You got to be part of it. You're not supporting our narrative. Well, if you didn't support their narrative, you're gone. So Ruben was the exact same thing. Tim Pool, Ruben, what? Here you got a Occupy Wall Street guy went around the country doing a, definitely want him. Then you got the young Turk guy that's, you know, good looking gay guy that's going to, we want him. And then any of these guys, which there always is, that doesn't support the narrative, and you're done. And it's because you're not supporting the narrative. And it's the same thing that happened. I could never understood what the F they were dealing with when they decided who the hell did this when they canceled Firefly. I never understood. It's, they had a mission. They wanted to what? It was very clear now after yesterday. When they had the narrative was the Alliance government, like in Pirates Without Borders, we'd say the Crown. It was very clear that the attitude on that show, Joss Whedon and the actors, they all supported the idea that government is there to get in your way. Government is a problem. I'm going into the black and I ain't coming back. Take the land, boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. I mean, the theme song, the narrative that was being challenged by them in every episode, it had to go because it, and when people were coming back from Iraq and so on, and they're all being brown coats because they put the movie, you know, the package of series on all the ships and at all the bases. If you're in the military, you're watching Firefly. And they're like, hell no. It had the wrong message. You have to be on message in everything, in all broadcast media, radio, television, the newspapers, social media, platforms, everything, to support what? That there has to be a collective. And that collective has to be on page for whatever the hell it is that they're doing. And it doesn't even really matter as long as it does not include individual rights. That an and it started with me. The first thing was I graduated high school in 79. I worked for an entire year, saved up as much money because I couldn't get, you know, because my white privilege prevented me from getting any affirmative action money. And I didn't have support of my family. My dad's like, get to work, you know, kind of thing. So I'm like, I'll just make my own money and I'll go to college. I go to Arizona State University. I go to Philosophy 101. First thing, you know, big assignment. I'm all excited. I'm going to do what up. And it has utilitarianism, the most good for the most people. Deontology, which is kind of, you know, certain universal rights that can't be violated regardless of how many, you know, people get blown up or whatever. And my argument was I got an idea. I say that the most good for the most people is the defense of individual rights, that what make life worth living, that what makes a good society, that's what makes me doing that D minus, D D is not failing, but a D. And I'm like, what the hell? That is control of the narrative. And that was 1981, round in there. So 1981, I'm getting a dose of you're not thinking right, boy. And my entire adult life has been me battling that headwind, is that you're not thinking correctly. And in and this is where we get to smart cities that came in a couple of 3 years ago in Arizona, where you have, of course, Michael Crow, which is the head, you know, super guy in charge of Arizona State University. That's also NQTEL, which is the, you know, venture capitalist, give you money arm of the CI freaking A, that you had the genome, all kinds of experiment labs and stuff that they were doing in the name of, you know, the saving the planet and or ruling the planet, that is ASU downtown Phoenix. And they do, I mean, bad guys. So what happens? All of the buildings that were supposed to be for global warming and all that BS got shifted into sustainable development, which is the same people, same thing. And they do it smart cities. Now, Patrick Woods, which is one of the guys that was featured prominently in some of the videos that James Corbett and I were going over last night, was Professor Sutton. Professor Sutton worked for the Hoover Institute. He came in contact in the late 70s with Patrick Woods, that lives in the Valley of the Sun there in Scottsdale. So all of a sudden, they together wrote Trilateralist Over Washington, Volume 1 and 2. The technocracy.news and the trilateralists, the new trilateralists, or whatever the hell, the technocrats and all this other stuff, the books by Patrick Woods, you know, all of a sudden that he was introduced to me by Senator Karen Johnson, which is one of the kind of Ron Paul exceptions that proves the rule kind of thing in politics. And I just got an email from somebody asked me if I knew her or what I thought of her. And I go, yeah, I know her, you know? And so she introduced me to him and I'm going, you're the guy. Because you start in politics in the late 80s, early 90s, you got to know about Trilateral Commission, that conspiracy that doesn't exist. And then they celebrate their 40th anniversary with the Rockefellers and all these guys up there going, we made it, you know, and thanks. And they had their Bilderberger stuff. Thanks to all you media for keeping your word and keeping silent and not reporting on this, or we wouldn't be able to accomplish saving the world like we did in our image. You know what I mean? They are open about this stuff. And you have to understand it's intentional. And it may not just be the Bilderbergers. It may not just be the World Economic Forum. It may not just be, you know, whatever country or group or central banking of the industrial complex of whatever the hell, or the alien supporting techno, we got their new whiz bang computer chip of whatever the hell. It may not be, you know, they're all in one club, or the supervillain of that. What they may very, very well be. They certainly want to. It's the same narrative. The threat to every single one of them is the support of individual rights and the purpose of any government taking your tax money, taking and indebting your grandchildren, spending in your name or your kid's unborn name, you know, is the support of a narrative that is you not being in charge of you. So when they did this smart cities thing, they came in with a three-legged stool. They had policymakers. They come right out. You go look at it. They come right out and say it. We have policymakers, which is lawmakers. They were legislators and city council and all this other crap. Then they had academia, which was Crow, which was the universities, their system. They got all the building. They're bringing up these new people. They're manufacturing technocrats to run their shit. And they got an entire curriculum that goes to getting a super degree of we, you know, run the animules. The humans. One more thing was industry. They had businesses. This is where Intel and Google and Microsoft, this is all in Arizona right now. So my target, when I come back, now I know what I'm up against. All that stuff is just the pinnacle of a narrative. And the narrative has to be supported in media, movies, TV shows, you know, social media, everything. That's what's going on.
Well, no, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think I was just thinking as you were talking there, you know, the crosshairs, you know, because there's nothing between your opinion, you're looking at it, and me. You know, you come at it more as it's the system is corrupt and the people are corrupt, and we have to take the system down or attack the system. Whereas to me, I tend to err more on in a way, I hate to say this, but blaming the people, you know, because to me, it's more about the culture. And the thing is, the reality is it's both. I think both of us recognize that. It's just, you know, is it exactly 50-50? Maybe not. Maybe it's 51-49. Who really cares? You know, it's just, it's both. And I think, you know, I've influenced you with this. You've influenced me with it. We definitely, I mean, I've always known the system's corrupt. You got corrupt people like sociopaths, which, you know, I've talked about, but it's both. But I think it's just the system does what they do. Corrupt people and sociopaths are always there. You know, they're throughout history. And I'm not going to get on a sociopath rant because people who listen to the show a lot know I can. I've done long shows on it. But, you know, I've told you, I've admitted my frailty, my fault, my evilness. I've admitted it, especially being a doctor. I mean, I should be stoned and feathered or tarred and feathered and stoned afterwards or whatever. It's because I question whether we should ever do eugenics, which I know is a path you should never go down. But if 4% of the population is sociopaths, what happens when we get, when we're able to identify it? And by the way, a science news alert, just last week, it was declared by the science community that the human genomic code, the Human Genome Project, finally concluded. Well, I mean, it never ends, but we finally sequenced an entire human DNA. They just announced it last week. So they just did it recently. And they started that like in 1992.
I feel safe now.
Touche. But anyway, the point is that we just now took this long to do it. So at some point, you know, we'll be able to identify things like, and look, I already know all the corruption, all the evilness now that can happen. Trust me. And your point is very apropos. I get it. But like, for instance, Tourette syndrome, which by it's been affecting me a little bit today. Some of you long-term listeners know I'm stuttering a bit more than usual today. Tourette's comes and goes. But, you know, at some point, my children, you know, that DNA component can be snipped out. So maybe Tourette's will be a thing of the past, of history. And the question is, if we can identify the sociopath gene, and I believe that most laws and regulations and everything that we have that you libertarians love so much, the reason we have them isn't to really stop disputes amongst normal people who can figure things out on their own in the free market and whatever else. It's the sociopaths, the Negans that come with bats with barbed wire around it that Irene has in his bedroom. But the thing is, that is the concern, is that the sociopaths will disrupt the Atlas Shrugged, you know, utopia that many libertarians keep talking about. That's why I think it will never work until we deal with the sociopath issue. So the issue is, can we get rid of them or not? Anyway, or even should, because there's an argument to be said that Mother Nature has sociopaths for a reason. Maybe we need them, if nothing else, to make good Jerry Springer television ratings. I mean, maybe that's the reason. I mean, I don't know. But there's something to be said.
Sociopaths, because they're a ruthless businessman, or they're a ruthless this or a ruthless that, you know, sometimes may advance something, or you're in a war or whatever. I'm not for, you know, messing with nature. I don't give a crap how I'm nope. But I do want to have the capacity to be able to find out and have the information myself. You know, I'm like, you know, I got my own private, spaceship. I got the precariat. I'm going, hey, man, you're going under a brain scan. You're taking your, because that's what Scuttlebutt was all about. One of the letters of reprisal on PiratesWithoutBorders.com is all about outing the sociopaths using social media. You have a ranking system like on Yelp or eBay or something like that, where people kind of, you know, over time you'll go there. Like you said, there's always a trail of dead relationships and dead bodies behind these people. If you out them, because what happens as we go into the next expansion of liberty, because sooner or later there will be, there's going to, you know, be no matter how many, you know, hours, weeks, decades, millennia, you know, go by, sooner or later, freedom will rear its head and freaking, I'm not going to play anymore. And it'll go again like it always does. But the thing is that, you know, how many dead bodies are there then? And I'm, you know, I want to have the capacity to be able to, you're allowed on my pirate ship or my Mars colony or whatever, and you're not, you know? So I can guarantee whoever is going on, you know, the trip to Mars is going to have a psychological profile that fits in some, Overton window created by freaking Elon Musk in France. I guarantee it. They're going, you know what? You may be the best technical, you know, suck freaking methane out of dirt, you know, in the air, anybody on the planet, but need not apply.
Well, so my point is that the sociopaths have been there all along, right? This through evolution, millions of years, there were sociopath gorillas. You know, our ancestors, well, technically gorillas are not our ancestors, they're a spinoff for some of you diehard science people. But the thing is, it's the chimpanzees, really. But the thing is
bonobos.
It's the culture versus the sociopaths. And many times we blame the sociopaths, or in general terms, the government, the media, same thing, right? But the thing is we'll blame them. But what I have spent a lot of time on the show, and again, and you and I have had a lot of common ground with this, and I appreciate, you know, the platform to change your mind a little bit on this, which is that the culture is equally important, if not more so, because if there's more of us than them, then the real issue is the culture. The culture is the defense, including comedians, Dave Chappelle, whoever. They are better than guns, is the culture. And this, the culture that's kept them in check. And that's why I make such a big effing
punishment
deal about it.
And reward. And so it's what you get. It's how it's managed, social and economically engineered. See, I can only blame the people so much. I can blame them. It's not that you don't know and you're ignorant of the facts. You know, the problem is that you don't want to know the facts. You know, and you just kind of cast those guys to the side.
This is going to be a battle of small percentages versus small percentages. But the question is, how do you get there? And look, there's an old saying, I'm sure you've heard this, you know, that strong men, you know, what bad times make strong men, and good times make weak men. And there's that whole little cycle. And we're kind of dealing with this now. I mean, I think people listening to this show are strong men and women. And I'm not playing the PC card there. I mean it. I mean, God knows, I've seen some of these conservative and libertarian women are kick ass. I got to be honest. We're all in this together. The thing is that we're the exception, though. Most people are weak. They've become weak. The heck, I mean, just men today. I mean, I saw a bunch of names, but I've been doing stuff and I've been talking to a lot of these older guys who are like dealing with our property, you know, people who are like, you know, surveyors and engineers and whatever. And a couple of them brought their kids out, and their kids are like in their 30s. You know, they brought their kids. And the kids, I mean, they're snowflake kind of people. You know, they're sitting there watching Pokemon and they're 30 something years old. You know, I mean, it's just, you sit back and then they're nice people, but they're completely different than the generations from before.
They've been created, right. Generations and trillions of dollars to produce the environment that they have now. And with the technology that they got available to screw with your mind, they're making you numb and dumb. It is just, it's part of the, and anybody that breaks out of that narrative, anybody that comes out and starts and gets some popularity in what he said, they go after him. I give you Jordan Peterson. It is an exact example of him, Ron Paul, anybody that challenges this main narrative that, you know, you have to have some central command tell you when you're being good or not and how many mask levels you're wearing. You know, it's so clear to me now. It's always been clear to me, but I didn't understand the role that these other countries played. Are we going to have to be freed by China? We're going to need a red dawn to save us from our, you know, evil capitalist, you know, perilous dogs of whatever the hell. I go, no, they're all the same thing. They're all supported. There is evidence. There's history of each one of these leaders that would bring a country together were manufactured by the same ideology. In fact, the same people, so that they could herd the entire planet. And I don't know if this came from Alpha Sin, whatever alien of something, whatever the hell's going on, or we're just freaking livestock for, you know, to serve man or what.
This is why I do get angry at libertarians, because many of you guys will sit there and fight on an area that's like from Highlander, holy ground, at least to me, which is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights we all agree on, but the Constitution itself. I mean, to me, it's not her. You might say, "What's well, still the man telling you how to do things?" But it's I believe it's one of the most beautiful, balanced way to have a government. That at least
I don't want a balanced way. It balances between government agency versus government
agency. All right,
agency.
I know.
What about me?
Ernie, but it's the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. They go hand in hand. The Constitution gives the power mainly to the government, but it also does it in such a way. It also gives it such balance that it still keeps the way it's
formed. There's no balance.
Ernie, hold on.
Black robes that tell you what your balance is. Get in your free speech
Ernie,
zone.
Wait,
don't tell
you,
me there's no balance.
Wait. There's balance. There is a meta balance. So you have the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So the Constitution is kind of like, it's like gambling. It's at the casino, right? I mean, people can make money at the casino, but the house usually wins to the most part because everything's geared like 51% in favor of the house or 55%, depending on what game you're playing, right? I mean, I suppose like was a craps is the best thing for you, right? Blackjack. But anyway, the thing is it leans to the house. So the Constitution is very balanced for the most part, but it leans towards the authority, the man, right? It leans towards them. But if you compare our Constitution to every other method of government around the world and through history, it is beautiful. Take off your cynical goggles and compare it to everything else, it is fantastic. But it does, I admit, lean more towards the system, which is why libertarians find it abhorrent, anything that leans towards the system or any government at all. Whereas the Bill of Rights is at the same time, in that case, it's leaning towards the people. It's saying, okay, this is what the people get. So you've got one document that leans to the authority and one towards the people. So together, those two are balanced themselves. Yeah. And I think it's a combination of that has led to the culture, that has led to people like Ernie Hancock sitting there and spewing out on his microphone in his van running around and saying, hey, screw the man. Like I say, try doing that in Iraq or other countries. That won't last long. But it's a culture that's left that's allowed us to be, and I'm going to use your whole argument from earlier today, that we are the last pinnacle. You sound like Ronald F. and Reagan, God bless him, who sat there and said, if liberty ends, you know, what did he say about that? There's no, the last place standing is America. I forget his actual quote. If liberty starts to fall apart, the last stand on earth is America. I think I forget the exact quote, but
there
it's
ain't
the
no other
thing.
Place to go. There is no place.
No place. And so why is it America is that place? And you can't just say because it is. It's because of a culture, and the culture that's backed by our history and the government that we have
is good under tremendous attack right now.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. This is when
I agree.
You get me all going about this Constitution thing. Let me tell you what happened in about 89. I decided that, you know, there was something majorly wrong. It wasn't what they were telling me in school. I mean, I knew that. I had enough experience in high school and college to kind of see there was an agenda. There was something else, and it wasn't the truth. I mean, I just, all right, let's start with, the founding document. I went down to the Phoenix Library. The Phoenix Library, where it is now, do you remember when the Phoenix Library used to be in a different place on Central, more North Central? It was that old before they moved to the big one and went all Taj Mahal. They had a history section, and then it had this own little closed off room about half the size of a classroom. It was probably like, I don't know, 20 by 20. And in there were all the Arizona history. It's all the, you know, legislators that wrote books like, Sam Steiger and Meekum and, and Castro, all these guys that governors, people that wrote books, they got their books in there about, who gives a crap. Well, outside, I'm going, okay, I just want to read the document. Let's start over. Declaration of Independence. You read the Declaration of Independence, I get it. You guys are buttheads and we're tired of it. And we gave, to a candid world, we're telling you all the reasons why we're breaking with thee and we should rule ourselves and screw you. And we're declaring and, bring it on. We're done. And this is why. And the proper rule of government is. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity. Okay, that really stuck with me. The last paragraph. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity, give ourselves up to what has to happen. And, let's have a war if you want one. Here we go. So I get it. Then you had The Articles of Confederation was never in after the Declaration. You never saw that. You had to go to another section to get that one. You know, then you got the Constitution. Well, the Constitution was so bad that Patrick Henry goes, I smell a rat. That's where that came from. He goes, I see what they're doing. Hell no, we're not going to sign this. I think it was Rhode Island or Delaware. It was one of them. They go, no, we ain't signed. This is, we know what you're doing. You're collectivizing. You're doing the agenda. This is what, you know, the narrative that you're creating. You're trying to get us back into the same mindset and what you're trying to do with, might as well just call him king. In fact, John Adams was wanting to call George Washington king. You know, I'm going, wow. So the Bill of Rights was developed. And it came from Virginia, had a Bill of Rights that they had already written, and they kind of, you know, crafted it from that. And that was to keep another American Revolution from happening on going after this central government that they created. They go, no, hell no. It's a dead letter. And they did it in secret, and it was Hamilton. Hamilton, definite sociopath. Hamilton. He was the guy, Jefferson, man, the most vile freaking, you want to play negative campaign you ever saw. Aaron Burr going to, they go, you know, Aaron should have been shot for taking so long to shoot Hamilton. I mean, you know, that kind of crap. Well, here comes the Bill of Rights, was to keep from having another revolution because the Constitution sucks so much of these people. So they go, no, so don't sit there. You read to anybody, you go and read the Constitution without the Declaration of Bill of Rights, and you see what it is. It's the power, the power, the power, the power eminent domain, the power to regulate commerce, the power to tax, the power to war, power to take your crap, the power to have, you know, blah, 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 blah. The power, the power, the power. And it was taken, but that's why the 9th and 10th Amendment is in the Bill. Whoa, 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 whoa. These powers don't override the states of being their own kind of. So that is what we've been up. They go, okay, we'll take this. We got enough. We're good. Because what they wanted to do was to go in debt. They wanted a central bank. Well, we're on our third, fourth central bank. And this was the number one thing that they wanted, the money. And the first thing they did was from the Bank of England, borrowed $350,000, which might as well have been $1 billion back then. And they took that and they paid off all the debts and they went into debt and they did. But not worth the Continental. What were they doing while they were crafting the Constitution? They went out and bought for pennies on the dollar, 3 cents, a nickel, whatever, for all these Continentals. That was like the war debt they had during the Revolution. And then, boom, the U.S. Constitution paid, you know, full face value for it. And anybody that got them, they got paid. 5%. They made a bunch of money. And who were the guys doing it? And who paid them? The Bank of England. So don't tell me the Constitution is just some freaking divine document.
It is.
It was the enslavement. It was the deal they got. The deal they got to make us part of a collective. And this has been going on for a gazillion years, and it will keep going. And the promise that they made to us with the Declaration was dead a decade later with the Constitution. And the only thing that held it off as long as it has been the Bill of Rights. And what are they attacking? The First and the Second Amendment with everything they got. Everything. They don't give a crap. And who's going to decide? We got the Supreme Court just comes out 9-0 in favor of gun rights in California or whatever it was, saying, nope, you can't, you know, take away or do this or do that or something. And it doesn't matter. It's transitory. It happens. It doesn't happen. They change. They go back and forth. It's all. So I am, you know, the Constitution, I understand the narrative of it. It was a deal that freed the people to have a powerful government. No, it wasn't. The Declaration and Articles of Confederation, the path that we were going on then was the threat. It threatened them with France. It threatened them with the inspiration it had around the world. And it was the Statue of Liberty that when it came American, what it represented, go, we got to get on the ball here and change the Frank's culture. We got to change what the narrative that is to be supported. We got to have, give me the pictures, I'll give you a war. What World War One was
Ernie.
About.
All right, Ernie, I'm trying to think of a delicate way to put this. Let me see. I was going to think of this long explanation. Let me just make it so. You're wrong. All right. Let me explain why. So So look, it's kind of like trying to explain to probably my daughter when she watches, when she gets older and we do a big Star Wars like extravaganza, which I probably will. She'll watch Star Wars and say, "It's slow. Look at those cheesy special effects," or whatever. Maybe she'll say that. Or it's like people today who watch King Kong and don't realize that people were freaked out watching King Kong. I mean, no one had ever seen anything like it. It was like Star Wars of its day. And that might be a better example. But people, they make references to what they know or think today, and they can't put themselves back. I mean, that's the whole problem we have today about this whole critical race theory BS, that our founding fathers were all just slave owner asshole racists. I mean, they don't understand the concept of the world that we came from, the concept that back in their day, you know, that they were going through revolution and thought themselves, because humanity was considered in two classes. You had the lords and noblemen and the commoners. And if you were not a lord, you're a commoner. And this wasn't just some title. This was something that under God, that everyone believed in at that time, and they really believed it, is that you were truly created differently. Under God, God made one group superior that to another.
Was their narrative they kept pushing?
Yeah, well, call it a narrative, whatever you want to call it. These people,
counter to almost that. Every the Declaration country, of Independence was every totally counter to that.
Ernie, you make it seem like it's so simple. Thousands of years in every country that we know of, except maybe Greece. There was some enlightenment from Greece for a little bit of time. But the thing is, there was never this concept that all men were created equal, right? And I mean, this is why it gets me up. They go, "Oh, men, well, what about women? You guys are a bunch of sexist pigs." No, no, no. The concept of just the fact that God, that you never questioned God, and you had the Pope or whatever religious leaders, it was ingrained in you that you were less of a human being at your core that can never be changed ever compared to the people in charge of you. Which I know, except Ernie Hancock, I'm sure would have figured all this out regardless back then. But most people, it was ingrained. You didn't question God. You saw something fly across the sky. You didn't know it was a comet or a meteor. All you knew was the eye of God. You have no reference to anything. And so that's the world that narrative, came from.
Your social credit score and it was
the Magna Carta that first began to just even scratch the surface of equality of people, of the people themselves having any say. And it was having a clean slate for the most part, an Etch-a-Sketch. I know there's the original Articles of Confederation and then the first Constitution and all. But the thing is, you're starting from scratch with a mindset that's never even been tested before, to allow the people without a king or the Pope or anyone else in charge to tell you how to think, that the people could just have the concept. And that was revolutionary in a way, almost of agriculture, of the internet. I mean, it was that profound of a change that people today, because they're dumbasses, don't have any concept of history. So they sit back today with a black president and everything else and go, "I can't believe these bunch of racist people." And they put all men are created equal. Oh my God, they didn't use the right pronouns. And all this BS, they have no concept of the intellectual profound shift. I mean, talk about a paradigm shift. I hate to use that term. It's kind of cliche, but it truly was. And only America, having no one else bothering them, being on the other side of the planet, you know, having some time to think and hammer this out. And that's what the Constitution was, this balancing act of the Senate and the House and states' rights versus where it was the federal, and if a state has more people, you know, to balance out. Each state has two senators, and where the Senate, you know, trumps, no pun intended, over the House over certain things, and how the House can actually do, for instance, how the Senate will determine the Supreme Court, because the Senate tends to be a little more entrenched in the system to understand how the system works. There's so much balancing that goes beyond what people even know, in my opinion. Remember, I come from Philadelphia, and when you go through the Philadelphia school system, at least the way it used to be, Philadelphians take the Constitution very seriously. I mean, that's kind of our thing. You know, if you come from Texas, it's guns. California, it's surfing. In Philadelphia, you learn about Constitution. I don't know about now. I'm sure not now. But the thing is, that is That was a profound shift. Huge. And then the fact that just within a year or whatever it was, or within that conversation, they're like, oh, wait a minute. Well, what about the, what defenses do we have of the people against the government, which is what you're talking about? And the Bill of Rights comes up. Now, you often, I might be wrong. I don't speak for you. I'm sure you're going to go on a rant and tell me how wrong I am. That's fine. But you're going to, you look at the Bill of Rights as like, is like an obvious defense against power hungry, you know, founding fathers that were so greedy and salivating at taking control of this new country, and they can create this. And it was like, oh, damn, shucks. You know, it's like Scooby-Doo kids come in with this, with Thomas Jefferson, this Bill of Rights. Oh, damn, we almost got him. We snared him. But damn, Thomas Jefferson shows up here and trying to put some. I mean, that's how you see it. It's very cynical. I see it the opposite. I see it that the Constitution itself was as profound for the people as the Bill of Rights itself was. I know you don't see it that way. Wait. I do. The Bill of Rights was like a whole nother bonus when they started to think this through, that, you know, we could go even grander with this. We could go even further with it. And how do we defend?
How do we know if we don't do it?
The Constitution will not turn. Wait, how do we know the Constitution will not turn into a dictatorship? How do we know that? The Constitution itself was a government that would be more free and more balanced for the people than any government created before it. So in their mind, they thought that they already succeeded, and they did. But the Bill of Rights was one more check when people thought even further how this could evolve. So just the fact that we still, that they got it through. And I mean, yes, they had a fight. I understand. But for the most part, they said, yeah, let's do it. It wasn't like today where everyone's arguing and hydroxychloroquine. You're not allowed to talk about the Bill of Rights. How dare you? People actually discussed it, and they thought it was a great idea. And it went through without too much a debate on it. And that in itself proves that the system was not all these corrupt founding fathers, you know, with this mechanism, with this scheme for hundreds of years to take over the world that's now ending today. That's why I would disagree with you there. I think it's still a beautiful thing. And I think you're a bit more cynical from a historical perspective, in my opinion.
The power of the Constitution is what? Where is the power of the Constitution? Where is the boots on the ground thing? Where's that?
What do you mean the boots on the ground? What do you mean?
How's it enforced? Who's in charge of it? Who makes it happen?
Well, it depends. Again, it depends how cynical you are with it. I know what you're getting at, but technically it's the people. The people vote. And of course, back then there was no freaking dyeballed medical, you didn't need the cyber.
So,
back then it was paper. So the people voted, and they put in their representatives and the senators. And keep in mind, the way it was designed is that the representatives had the power. Nobody wanted the president to have any power. That's what the Civil War was all about, federal versus states. But back then, the states had the power, and the states were powered and run through the representatives and the senators voted for by the people.
A democratic constitutional republic, to where the democratic part elects the republic part, bound down by the constitution part. And maybe that worked for never. So this is, you know, the point that I'm making is the Declaration of Independence signers. How many of the people that signed the Declaration signed the Constitution? I don't know if it was any. I mean, I'd like to look. It sure as hell was a totally different crowd, I can tell you that. So, and it had to be done in secret by Hamilton, of all people, whose father-in-law was a merchant all buddied up with the Bank of England. That's how all that stuff happened. If you read Boston Tea Party's Hologram of Liberty, it goes on about a lot of this stuff. And, you know, you could see it as time went on. Now I could understand it's the narrative. It's why they had, no, we're going to give the states in this thing, the states get to select the two senators equally represented. Rhode Island gets two senators, New York, Virginia, everybody gets two senators that the state picks, the legislature, the governor, however you guys want to pick them, it's up to you. So then they have to, after they do the IRS and the Federal Reserve and income tax and all this 16th Amendment, then they go straight to the 17th Amendment. They got to take away the power of the states. They go, we're going to make them popularly elected. They have to be voted on by the people like the other stuff, to where we got to get control of that election process. This has been the narrative from the beginning, is that you
can't. How do you know that? Wait, what do you mean? That was the founding fathers like, well, we'll just make these dupes think that they're actually voting, but we're going to take control of the voting process. Are you kidding me? Come
it
on,
happened
Ernie.
1780. And 130 years later.
Well, they weren't planning that out. I'm not saying it's not happening now, clearly.
We'll watch
them do it.
All right. Huh? This is for the audience. I'm not trying to convince you. You already got your statement. That's your opinion. This is
the
my
founding
opinion.
Fathers are
this
already
is my opinion.
Rigging
the founding fornicators. I don't give a crap about them. You know, I go to Mount Rushmore. I'm at, Rapid City, South Dakota, and they got Crazy Horse, big giant monument, just the head of the guy on the horse. The whole Mount Rushmore fits on the face of Crazy Horse. They don't tell you about that one. They tell you about Mount Rushmore and how in the middle of, the Dakotas and the Lakota Sioux and the Native Americans there, we're going to put this big, great white leader. There was a bunch of them, four of them here, we're going to put up there for America out in, Washington. We rule you and get over it. And they go, yeah, well, we're going to have our own Crazy Horse. And where my land is where my ancestors lie buried, with him pointing out on his horse said, right here. What do you say now? And they go, yeah, well, we rule you still. Kind of, it's just ouch, quit it. I idolatry of freaking whatever. I don't give a crap. This is, I'm talking about, in, it was early 1900s, 19-teens, it was after Federal Reserve, so it had to be in, probably the 20s, that they did the 17th Amendment. Because what was the promise they made to the states before? They go, you as a state have your sovereignty. It's a small U, United States of America, like the state of Israel. I mean, you're a state, you're a sovereign country that's united under this Constitution. That was the promise. That was the deal. And they go, to make sure you hold up to that deal, in the Bill of Rights, you got the 9th and 10th Amendment that has states' rights, and screw you. And if it's not, then, anything we missed in the Bill of Rights is still reserved to the states and whatever. And we know what you're trying to do, you sons of bitches. So they go, okay, fine. We want to be able to, Hamilton even said, we need to be able to tax to be able to have a sustained war. And I'm going, oh hell, that's a good reason to do it. So then I'm going, all right. So it's 100 and something years later. They need to get in this income tax. They do the Federal Reserve, get the central banking. They do all this stuff. And then these damn pesky states are being a pain in our ass. We need to get them out of the equation, change the 17th Amendment to where they're popularly elected by the people. And I'm going, why? They already had the House of Representatives. That was the people's house. That's why they call it the people's house. They elected them, and all appropriations and money spending bills came out of the House. Well, they go, well, we need these senators not to, muck up our plans, or, whatever the state's rights are or what their interests are. We don't care about. It's not with the narrative. So then they had to have them popularly elected so that they could control that process, which is what the F is going on right now. Now, not later, not hypothetically, now. In Maricopa County, Arizona, right?
How many years later?
Now.
How many years later? Can you remind the audience how many years later?
For what?
I mean, how many years later did it take to have the see what we're seeing now? And that's also hindsight's 2020. There was no internet. They had no electricity. They had no telecommunications. They were in a whole different world, Ernie.
The goal
Come on.
Was to have centralized control to rule the world, to be in charge of commerce. I care not what makes the laws. It's who prints the money. And, man, they are printing money now.
Yeah, but first off, you keep bringing up Hamilton. And, yeah, it's amazing how liberals, or especially a lot of Americans, don't know anything about our history, our founding fathers. But only isn't it – I'm sure the two of us will be in agreement with this. It's fascinating how everyone who doesn't understand history – suddenly in the last 5 years or 6 years is now they're all fans of Alexander Hamilton, right? There's a musical, Disney put it on TV. I've never seen such a push for a founding father. Nobody even paid attention to
support the
right?
narrative.
So no, exactly. So he was the,
they take down all the other statues. Yeah. We got, where's Alexander Hamilton statue? You got to have an Alexander Hamilton statue. Here it comes, man.
I'm sure pretty soon that they will. I mean, I find it fascinating. Of all the founding fathers, you got Ben Franklin and Washington and Jefferson and Adams, and we go down. I mean, and Thomas Paine, which kind of founding father. You get all these people. Hamilton, who that man? Whoever talked about Hamilton? He's on the dollar bill for the Federal Reserve. But I mean, no one ever talked about Hamilton. And all of a sudden, he's the patron saint, the only founding father that everybody talks about, at least on the left. So that should tell you a big sign in itself.
Yes, it does.
So
what and let me tell you what we should look for that culture shift that, you know, I get to make my freaking point and you'd see what movie is never going to get made, and which means someday it will, is that the
Trump the movie.
Okay, it's almost as good, okay, is the presidential race between Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson. The combativeness, the negative campaigning, the freaking every single piece of mud of any and everything that could pod the passions of this we rule you narrative thing and they, them, those, and all the money of the world, of the bank of everybody versus the American people and the concept of the Declaration of Independence and Thomas Jefferson. That was on full recorded newspaper ads, pamphlets, campaign literature, speeches, everything, a whole army on both sides intellectually discussing this very issue in our history. And you think that should have been a movie? Why not? Because
well, not
it doesn't
movie.
Support their narrative.
Yeah, first, I think it should be like a 10-hour miniseries to really branch out.
It doesn't,
like the,
it ain't happening.
Like the John Adams.
It doesn't support their narrative.
No, I get it. I get it, especially now in today's context. But it's just fascinating how they didn't even care about Hamilton. They were not even propping him up a few years ago. It's only like 5 years, 4 or 5 years ago. It's everywhere.
Narrative.
Now, I get it. I get it. Now, one thing I will take a couple shots here at you. Number one, yes, I think it's interesting you're mentioning that Hamilton would be a sociopath. I never thought about it in that way. I don't want to. I mean, I tend to have that sociopath radar just because I'm dealt with one big
Why
time.
Why would he say we need a government to wage constant war? I mean, what kind of person says that?
But, well, someone who's in fear. It doesn't have to be a sociopath will do that, but it's also people who live in fear. You say no fear, no fear. No wonder you prefer Jefferson over Hamilton.
Bad
people
guys.
Who live in fear will do that. I don't know. Now, I'm not going to say, you know, with the limited but more than most people experience of sociopaths and antisocial disorder that I do have. I'm not going to make that claim with Hamilton right now. I'll look into it a bit more, but it's an interesting point. But let's just say Hamilton, whether he is or not, you know, you're making the.
I'm making a what?
You still there? Yeah, there. There's no way I think Hamilton is sitting there getting marching orders from some grand cabal, bones and crossbows or crossbones, you know, sitting there in some cabal trying to figure out how we're going to plan and engineer the takeover that happens in 2021. I mean, that's foolishness. I mean, I think sociopaths do what they do. And yes, maybe it's from fear. Maybe it was a sociopath. I don't know. But yeah, that's the argument, and it happened at that time. But I want to get back to a certain point. And I know you like take, in my opinion, cheap shots at the Constitution, and it's very easy to do. So I want to ask you a question. Do you think that the founding fathers, when they said all men are created equal, did so because they had their secret meetings behind, you know, closed doors, which they did in Independence Hall, Philadelphia, and they sat around and said, ha, ha, ha. Well, you know, those women, they need to be barefoot and pregnant and baking brownies for the next 200, 300 years. And we don't respect our women, do we? Ha, ha, ha. They're just our slaves. They just happen to be white slaves. So let's sit back and make sure we put all men, and we'll capitalize M-E-N. Men, we're in charge here, not those damn women. So do you think that discussion happened? Or do you think that when they put down all men are created equal, let's just say, to keep it really simple, it was a bit more complicated and nuanced of the times? Yes or no? Just, I mean, yes or no?
I say that was Declaration of Independence, and they didn't do that in the Constitution, so you got to change your point.
No, my point, right, but my point is, I'm fine, but my point being is that you have the sex, I'm sorry, you have the you have the new SJW warriors with purple hair who sit back and say that.
Yeah, you cut out again. Frank. All right. I got to try and get him back where I can hear him. And I show that he is there, but
that we're all no equal audio. Under. No, I'm sorry.
Okay, I hear you again now. You cut out for a while. You're all passion walking around, not getting your Wi-Fi. Frank's doing. I can tell when Frank's walking around because you know, this is what happens.
There we go. There we go. So it's kind of like it's easy to sit back and think that they were just purposely trying to create problems. They hated women, but it's more nuanced. People don't realize that humanity was going through that revolution, that profound revolution, that we were all created equal. Yes, they put men, but that was the way they wrote and thought at the time. It wasn't they hated women. It was the vernacular. It was the way they spoke. It was a little more cultural, but it's complicated. It's not
in the Constitution, a Bill of Rights. I don't remember them saying anything about whether women get the vote or not. That was like a state thing. So it was up to the state. They wanted, you know, the federal government kind of did, you know, women get suffrage and whatever and so on. And they go, hey, man, why are you blaming us? We didn't do it. You know, yell at your state.
I'm going to tell you one of the main things that they were discussing. And this is a legitimate point. It's kind of like what we define today when MTV says, get out and vote. No matter what it is, go out and vote. I mean, many of us ourselves will, I think privately believe that we're not trying to tell people they shouldn't vote. But I think a lot of us think that people should vote who at least understand the issues, who at least can read. When I lived in Japan, I thought about being a Japanese. A lot of guys, they think about, or women too, if you want to be a Japanese citizen, especially if you're going to marry someone in Japan. And I was with someone for a long time in Japan. And, you know, you start looking into the dual citizenship and this kind of thing. Becoming a citizen in Japan, you guys have no idea. I mean, how difficult it is. That's when people say how racist the American system is. There's not a country on the planet that has easier citizenship rules than America. In Japan, you have to learn Japanese history, which is not just 200 years like America. It's like 2,000 years. You have to know every feudal system and all the transitions. And you have to do it in Japanese. You have to speak it. You have to write it. And the test for citizenship is in fluent kanji Japanese. Okay? There's no little like little American version of it. You either know it or you don't. And the reason, which is it's not because they're racist, you're racist, which, you know, they very, very homogenized society, but it's a very logical concept. You can't be a citizen to the point where you vote, because every citizen should vote. But you can't vote unless you can read and write. If you can't read a newspaper, then you don't understand the issues that are being discussed in the system to even vote on.
Get on with the narrative.
Right. Well, there we go. Of course. But I mean, it's a common sense thing, right? Whether it's narrative or not, you need to at least be able to read and write. And so that was the conundrum that our founding fathers had, which was women didn't usually, you know, a lot of them didn't read or write. A lot of men didn't read or write. But it was an issue of, but then if you said only the lords and nobles or the affluent who knew how to read and write could vote, I mean, this was the quandary in which they had. And then, of course, slaves, it wasn't even an issue of the slavery, because even if you're a free slave, the issue was, were you able to read or write? And of course, at the time, it was illegal. And yes, that's a whole problem. But I'm just saying that there's multiple issues to it. It's not simply, oh, you happen to be a woman or you're black, and therefore, you know, it's just automatically we're sitting near this white superiority complex. What happened was you had thousands of years of all the nobles and the people in charge telling you that you had no rights because under God, you were less of a human being. And when you're told that your whole life, I mean, how many people raised by parents are abusive who tell their sons or daughters that you're a piece of crap and you have no value? It affects you your entire life. Imagine an entire culture or all of human society believing that. And so for someone who's told that you have no value to finally find value in you is such a shift. And the first time in humanity happened in this country. And that's why I will defend the history and I will defend the Constitution faults and all, because of what it meant at its time. And it still holds up. And the Bill of Rights was on top of that. It was an extra bonus, which had this thing balanced.
So if it wasn't second, for the Bill of Rights, it wouldn't have lasted.
I get it. So, and I'm not going to try. I'm not going to make this longer, Ernie. But the first question, of course, obviously you understand the little intellectual trap, which you're not going to fall for. But the first do you think that the founding fathers?
Yes, I do. I just don't think equal, what you think.
when all men are created equal, were they really on their own consciously trying to put down women and keep them as slaves? No, they weren't. It was a concept of their time. And similarly, you know, the issue with slavery, you know, were they sitting there going out of their way, sitting there just trying to whip black slaves because they just really thought all white men, I mean, in a way, in a sense, yes, white men, and you had whites and the barbarians. That's kind of how the world was. I mean, you had another, and the rest of the world. It's hard for people today to see this, but when you lived your entire life and you never saw or met anyone of a different race, of a different color, of a different accent. I mean, just meeting someone from Virginia when you're from Pennsylvania, you might never meet anybody outside your immediate town your entire life. So to sit there and meet somebody that speaks a different language and wears different clothes and different God and everything else, I mean, it was so just completely out of your worldview. And if they didn't have the technology that even matched yours, it was easy back in those days to just think that, you know, God put you more in superior than them. They're more primitive. You know, it's like, it wasn't like equality when you yourself were told that you weren't even equal as a human being when you spoke the same language and wore the same clothes and shared the same stories and under your own, your own culture.
In there somewhere.
Yeah. So those are two. What? So
what? Wait, I missed a question.
In today's world, the idea our founding fathers were sexist pigs, if you talk to the feminists with purple hair, and then if you talk to the race hustlers, they say our founding fathers were all a bunch of definite racists, and everything that they did is based in race, which is critical race theory. And therefore, that's why they're successfully trying to convince people that everything in our country is racial.
Okay, hold on to your next question. Let me go ahead and answer
so
that.
So now, wait. So now, therefore, since I got two for two, the third is, because I'm dealing with feminists, I'm dealing with these race hustlers, then I deal with libertarians, who to me is this part of this trifecta, because they look at things, again, out of context of history, and they look at the founding fathers as a bunch of, you know, sociopaths, part of this grand order to take over in 2021, and this whole thing's been planned out, and they hate freedoms and this whole thing. So that's what I'm pointing out. I think it's a mistake that when 2021, we sit back and look at a time that was different and put our view today and blame them and thinking that this was all planned out. So that's why I was setting this up, that most of us, including you, would probably mock the purple-haired feminists for thinking our founding fathers were consciously trying to keep down women. And similarly with the race issue, and similarly, I would say, look in the mirror, Ernie, when you're this critical on the Constitution of its time, don't be so critical, because you're falling into the same trap that the blue hairs do. That's my point.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're so freaking wrong.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm fine. I'm all right.
All right. The misogynist, this is why, you know, I'm really going to, as much as you would advocate for culture, I'm really going to, you know, start hammering on this narrative, because when they go to want to show the misogyny of the men in early America, and they're going, yeah, they hated women, but they depended on them for everything. I mean, you know, they didn't like women, but they, you know, married them still, I guess. I mean, you know, they, you know, this low respect for women, I really don't see it. It was never really apparent. In fact, we were at Red Pill. One of the presentations was by a guy, the Women of the American Revolution. And he had like four or five stories of, you know, strong women. And you go to the North Bridge or the Shot Heard Around the World a couple of years ago. Bob and I were up there and talking about women this and women that, and Gettysburg about women. And so I'm thinking women got some props. You know, there was and it was a book that was on the ride of this one woman. I can't remember her name. She's only a 16-year-old girl. That while Paul Revere got all the accolades and all the attention, all the stories and all the poems and all that, there was a 16-year-old girl, you know, 40 miles in the rain, traveling with her horse, going around saying what's what, the British are coming, and has her story. I got that book and had it shipped to my granddaughter that just got it yesterday and is reading it. And I'm going, the point is that you support the narrative that you want to. And what's the narrative I want to support? I want, you know, my grandchildren and children, everybody to know that, you know, women played a big giant role in this, and they weren't just, you know, sewing flags like Betsy Ross. Who would push that narrative that, oh yeah, a woman hero of the revolution was Betsy Ross because she sewed a flag? I'm going, what? Who the hell would support and push that narrative? What person was it? Misogyny back at the founding of the country, or is it misogyny now? Is it a narrative that they're trying to push now? Because I guarantee freaking that when you're in a revolution, the women be there. They're not sitting on their hands baking bread. They are baking bread for, you know, the feed the troops or something. They're doing whatever the hell they can. But this men rule, men only vote, men whatever, that is something from some other people that want their narrative supported and will use history, will use books, will use the public government school system, will use whatever the hell they need or want to push their narrative. Is that the truth? I doubt it. I doubt it heavily. Anyone that's lived any amount of time, been married, had, you know, sons and daughters, knows that that's all bullshit. So I'm going, yeah, that's not what happened. So you know, what are the signs of it? When you look at the Declaration of Independence, it didn't have anything about freaking, you know, only men, you know, other than say, you know, all men are created equal. I'm not thinking they're thinking, you know, and that doesn't mean that none of them did. I guarantee you could pull out some signer of the Declaration that, you know, as a misogynist piece of crap of sociopath of whatever the hell, you know, I that's not my point. My point is,
but that's
is
my that, point.
That what there was or wasn't.
My point is you're agreeing with me that they weren't sitting there scheming to take away rights from women. So that's my point is that, but feminists today will beat up on the founding fathers the way that you beat up on them in hindsight 2020. It's easy to look at today's worldview and put it back then and say, what were they thinking?
Okay,
well, if
okay,
you're in
okay.
their shoes, get, it's more complicated.
No. Let me make this point. Then when you're going, well, you're just picking on the Constitution because you think they're, you know, whatever the hell. And I'm going, what was their reasoning? Why? They had the Declaration of Independence. We freed ourselves from the British Crown. We all of a sudden now we're have our own country with our own states. And it started off the original 13 states, colony, 13, you know, stars. It wasn't this big manifest destiny. Let's go see how many Indians we can freaking subjugate and kill and everything, take over, you know, North America, and we're still the good guys. I don't know where the hell that came from, but let's go and talk about the colonies back then. We've already taken it from the natives and whatever, and that's a whole nother discussion, which I'm sure wants to come up. And they have slaves and they do all this bad stuff. But the people that were born there, lived there hundreds of years, and they're going, you know what? We definitely don't want the British Crown to be telling us what we can and can't do, and we don't have any representation. You know, we'll worry about all our own stuff over here, but we'll worry about it here. It's definitely not none of their business, and we are declaring our independence. We're done. We're done. I break with thee, I break with thee, I break with thee. Well, then you had the Articles of Confederation. They were like, okay, well, we're confederated around what? In what way? We're kind of buds and doing whatever. And under the guise, under the excuse of we needed standardized weights and measures. We needed to have, we're going to use the King system. We're going to, you know, do cubits, or we're going to, you know, do metric, or whatever the hell it is that was available then. We need to have some kind of standardized weights and measures, you know, not like they didn't have that for millennia anyway, but you know, what kind of money we're going to do. That was the excuse to facilitate trade. We're going to have a secret meeting. So they go into, oh no, we're going to totally redo the entire government and allegiances of and sign for, and you guys got to, you know, speak for your people and get on board with. And when Rhode Island wouldn't do it, said, no, we're out of here. They boycotted Rhode Island. This whole thing, they pressured them into becoming in the union. They ostracized them. They canceled them. They deleted their platform. I mean, everything they could to get them in. Why? Because they love America. They wanted to, you know, get women. They wanted, you know, free the slaves. No, in the Constitution, a slave counted as 3/5 of a person. Why not, you know, 6 fifths or 4 fifths or 3? Where the hell did that number even come from? So they just made this crap up as they went along. And it was a document that they could get passed. That's all they cared about. They wanted
I have to interject. They didn't just come up with it like it was some random. It was like World War III wrestling with Hulk Hogan and Rowdy Piper in order to come up with the 3/5. So it wasn't just arbitrary. And as much as it seems disrespectful about Black people today, it was a lot of negotiation and thinking of different points of view. And it was a tough decision on all sides, and nobody liked it. They all needed showers afterwards, and really deep ones at that. Nobody liked it.
What can we get?
I know they did, but it was not an easy discussion. The whole thing. Don't make it just seem so flippant or just like they just came up with some number. I just wanted to point that out. It was a dark part, but it was a box that they found ourselves.
They wanted it passed. They didn't give a crap what the slave out in the field thought. You know, they didn't go ask him. He didn't get a vote. You know, this was they wanted it passed. Why? What were they passing? What would they need? What were they going for? It was just
I'll tell you what they were going for. They were going for to solidify a country before the country got split apart because they couldn't find any common ground. And then when you're divided, then England or Spain or France could come and take you out.
The first thing they did, Frank, it was a war of 1812. Here comes the British to go in and take over Washington and burn the White House because there were some documents there that they wanted to get rid of. And we have somebody that can surrender, somebody that we can sign a deal with. It's just the same thing happened with the Balfour. I think it was Balfour when they, after World War One, they get and they just drew map lines on a map and they said, you're sheik in charge of whatever. And here, sign this document. And that's how our oil got underneath your ground, underneath your sand. We need somebody to negotiate with. We need to have a collective to deal with. You know, if you just got, and this is why you go to Afghanistan for your empire to die, because there isn't a national soccer team. The Afghani do not think that way. They have individual tribes that kiss my ass. That's what's going on. And what they're trying to do, they needed to have a collective to be part of their narrative that they could control. You know, it always is. And then what happens? The money, the central bank. It's the same thing. And what's going on right now, to the degree that Americans are freer, you know, because of our, you know, nostalgia and traditions and whatever the hell is going on, they need to target us now. It is. They already got everybody else. You know, we got the social credit score, you know, freaking China. We got Russia, you know, is kind of consolidated into whatever the hell. European Union's got their shit going on. And then everybody else is just going to carve up Africa, however they're going to do. And then we got the little banana republics everywhere. What's left? Freaking America. And it's not America government. They already got what they wanted there. It's the culture. American middle class. It's those of us that, and what did they do over the last year? They targeted all of the mom and pop stores. Oh, you can go to Walmart and Amazon all you want, but if you want to go to a hardware store, you want to go to a restaurant, you want to go to some off chain, we just got in a small county, a community of farming, whatever the hell, oh, hell no. And we got a GPS coordinates of where your grain silo is. This is an attack on American people. I don't give a shit about the government. The government, the only reason they're there is to protect our individual rights, not to lock us in our homes, not to have curfews, not to force you to close your business, not to tell you what you can and can't take for trade and barter. This is an attack on the American people and the very culture, the very concept, the very idea that you're so supporting, saying it's the Constitution that guarantees or doesn't. It doesn't. The Constitution is a baseball bat Negan is beating us over the head with.
All right. Well, first off, you have 20 different concepts there. Well, first, I agree with what you're talking about. Yeah, it's an attack. And yeah, I'm shocked if nothing else. There hasn't been more anger over that very concept. Like,
it's
how is
coming.
It that small mom and pops are shut down and Home Depot can stay open, right? And why that's not right. But the thing is, and we don't have to keep going talking about the Constitution right now. Honestly, it's been, I was laughing. I said, heck, we're doing our annual 4th of July celebration show a bit early, so we can just repost this show for the 4th of July, and I'll ask you what you're doing 4th of July. I think Ernie Hancock must be in mourning or something.
We're going to be at Fort Fast celebrating.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, right. We'll see if you celebrate 4th of July, but we'll debate that later. But that's kind of what it is. But the thing is, you had just started off about where we were discussing the three-fifths compromise. I'm trying to explain how they saw it at the time, and then you're like trying to debunk me by jumping to the War of 1812. It's like, well, they didn't have the 1812. They didn't have a freaking DeLorean, Ernie. They weren't jumping around knowing this stuff. And I'm not saying they're perfect.
I'm saying they did know. I'm saying they know exactly what they're doing.
And you went from the founding of the Constitution or the country to 1812, and then you wind up jumping to today. So I mean, it's easy in retrospect to poke holes, and that's my point. All I'm saying is, okay, so let's stop the past. We're not going to change others' opinions on that. To me, it's a concept of living through it and living in history. Look, every one of us who listens right now to this show, how many of us have had assumptions that were destroyed when we actually maybe worked or lived in someone else's shoes? I mean, how many of us assume that how come the post office, forget the post office, but just, now, how many things have we taken for assumptions that these people don't know how to do their job? But if you all of a sudden you're working with them, you see what hard times the people have and what things they're up against for all industries, medicine. You know, how many people, I do this all the time. People don't understand. How come my doctor doesn't do X, Y, Z? It makes sense. But when you actually break it down and explain why, doesn't always mean it's logical, but they go, oh, now I understand the problem, or at least what they're seeing. It's living in another man's shoes makes all the difference. But in today's world, no one takes the patience to do that. And we're quick to judge, and social media and the Twitter mob. And it's all a bunch of piranhas attacking narrative. Everybody without concept and perspective. And that's why history is so damn important. And it's been lost, and why the system doesn't want to teach history in schools. And now they have to redo history with this friggin' 1690, whatever BS they want to redo history. So anyway, so let's get off of all that. So you were talking about as far as now. Yeah, I definitely agree, you know, with the concept of the narrative of trying to change it now. It's all about the culture and shut it down. They're coming after American culture ultimately. And, that's the overall deal.
Well, what's the news in Arizona? This election process, I got Ken Bennett, that used to be president of the Senate and secretary of state, is in charge of getting an accurate vote count, kind of crap,
right?
You know, and I'm going, oh yeah, I trust them. And then it's coming out that, you know, what we've always known, what I've been screaming for decades, is that Maricopa County is freaking corrupt as hell. And all of a sudden now they're going, damn, they're like super. You were wrong, Ernie. They're way more corrupt than you said.
Hey, Ernie, I'm curious. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being Joe Biden corruption or Hillary Clinton, where do you put Kelly Ward?
She is part of – I know Kelly. I've spent a lot of time with her. She is a social climber, politico, do what it takes and be and what do I got to say, and she's a tool of something. You know, she's like, you know, you tell me what I need to say or do to put me in the future of I'll be in whatever. And she's just smart enough to, she travels around with her mother all the time, you know, trying to keep her. We've had hours conversation sitting around with a bunch of libertarians at different events and so on, you know, camping overnight in Kingman, you know, seeing her at gun shows, doing, you know, different campaigns and so on. I've even had her on the show, and she is very clear.
Ernie, quickly tell the audience who she is.
Kelly Ward ran for U.S. Senate, and she was a state legislator too at one time. And she's a politico. She wants to be, you know, presidente of the universe someday or something. This is her thing. So if she, I think she's a doctor too or something, isn't she?
She's a physician. She actually was running on the primary against John McCain on the same year for Senate that I ran on the Libertarian ticket for Senate. So I encountered her quite often. And currently, she is, I didn't realize this until recently, she's head of the Arizona Republican Party.
Yeah,
and the reason she's coming up is she's jumping on the coattails of this Arizona audit. So she's now riding the coattails of the Trump Patriot movement.
And she as much to be trusted as Ken Bennett, former Senate President and Secretary of State. These guys, of course, they're going to ride this because this is the Trump, you know, thing of we got in Trump and always and kind of, and it's easy to be on the side of election fraud. And you think Kelly doesn't know exactly what I've been telling everybody? She knows. I've sat there and described in detail all the stuff that I've experienced with election fraud. So she knows. See, I'll slap all you guys around. Of course, these guys know. They've always known. I've been on the campaign trail running against their guys saying, look, I know. And he won't tell you. And they won't fix it. And this is how they're doing it. And it's illegal to even find it. And you blah, 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 blah. Of course, they know. They're just taking advantage of it. They're not going to fix it. So when we
Are they going to go to paper? Yeah, but that's not always the case. I mean, look, but you got AOC in office. I mean, AOC is a dingbat. I mean, the thing is, just because you sit there and you go on your 50-minute rant, and I'm not saying that's bad. I think it's great. You'll sit there and itemize it out. Just because you explained it to her doesn't mean that she either believes you, hears you, or, and I mean this without too much, just, well, whatever. It doesn't mean she even comprehends what you're saying. You need context. And when you look at the fact that people like AOC Maxine Waters, you got brilliant Mensa member Maxine Waters in office. You know, when you got these people in there, I mean, you can't always assume that they even understand what the hell you're talking about. It doesn't mean that they're corrupt,
Kelly,
that they're made of just friggin' stupid.
Knows exactly what I'm talking about. And Bennett knows exactly what I'm talking about. They live it, support it, turn a blind eye to it until they can't. And they will jump in front of parades. This is exactly what I mean when I say you create a parade, they will sprint to jump in front of it. And Kelly Ward is a sprinter. And she knew this. And from our conversations, I guarantee it, she could see that, yeah, I can see where the wind's blowing on this one. She wasn't early out on this. She wasn't front line on this. It was after it became clear that the Republican Party rank and file were definitely wanting to do it. And it wasn't a pro-Trump thing. It was an anti-Democrat thing. It was a Kirsten Sinema McSally, you know, I mean, what's his name? Kelly thing. Mark Kelly gets in. These guys know that. And who plays ball with them? Ducey, the governor. You know, this guy, how the hell do you think he got to be governor when you had Janet Napolitano governor? I'm going, Arizona is so corrupt on so many levels. They're the same party. It is obvious. They know it. They know I know it. And it is not a secret. So all I knew is that you had to create a parade for them to jump in front of. And everything that I've been doing for these decades was in preparation for this. You think I didn't have any impact on Kelly? Of course I did. Of course, we all did. This was neon flashing. They don't have a freaking choice. And how are they going to do it? In the end, the only thing that's going to fix this is that you have paper ballots voted on election day and counted at each precinct. That time, the whole thing is over by midnight. Done. They will never do that because they're not there to do that. They're there to steer the parade down the alley and the orange freaking netting goes around and you're done. That's what they're doing. They're Pied Pipering in. Oh, yeah, we're in. Oh, yeah. Oh, vote Republican. And they know it's a selection. You know, this whole thing is a lie. But what's happening is just people are in there. I have Liz Harris come on, John Brakey come on, Betty Smith come on. I have all these guys come on and talk to me about their how they're what they're finding and what they're doing. And we'll do shows after and everything. But in the end, the solution will never see the light of day. I guarantee it. I guarantee it because it doesn't fit the narrative. That's not what they them those want. All of this is just a show.
Hey, look.
Yes, I know Kelly.
No, I know you do.
I know she ain't gonna do it.
And the reason is
he is a functionary. You tell me what I got to do or say, and I'll be doing it. And
well, the impression I get is that she's a dumbed down version of Kirsten Sinema for the Democrats versus Republicans.
Very, very good comparison.
Exactly, and I know how you see them.
She's not as smart as Kirsten is. Dangerous.
She's smart. Yeah,
she's
going to
be saying all the right things. You know, and I told people that she would do this, and what did she do? no, we don't want to get rid of the filibuster because that would be wrong. And I'm kind of, you know, murka and, you know, that kind of stuff.
She stood up to the Nazis in her own party.
It was a plan.
You got to give her credit for that.
She sees where the future is. The future is not AOC and, you know, the mom, what the, all these freaking people, they're done. They did their part. You know,
yeah, but Ernie, you got to give her credit. She's sitting there as an outed lesbian. I mean, she's out about it. I mean, she's sitting there on the left.
I think she married
Arizona, in Arizona, you know, cowboy state, and the entire AOC contingent Nazis are telling her to, you know, to just drink the Kool-Aid, and she's standing up to them. When you have Disney and Coca-Cola and Gillette and every other corporation made up of typically conservative business owners bending the knee and taking huge hits and losing money, going woke, going broke. And Kyrsten Sinema's not, because she has the eyes on the prize for later, whether you call her vicious.
With support of who? Why is she able to do this? Why is she doing this? How come she didn't take an AOC Kool-Aid? Why?
Well, I mean, if you want to sit there and say, because she's got the eyes on the prize of power later. But the thing is, she is. You have to give her credit that she's taking a stand on something that she could be wiped out on. I mean, she really is.
When it comes to, you know, to serve man, she's going to put us on a platter and give us to whatever. You know, that's her. You know, to think that she's one of the good guys.
I know.
She's serving whatever the hell she's serving. I guarantee.
Ernie, wait. Look, good point. I want to be clear. I am not, because I can hear myself a little bit here. I am not trying to defend her. Like, Ernie, maybe she really has a good seat to her. Maybe she's really a good person. I want to be clear. I don't believe that either. I may sound that way. No, but you have to give her credit for rolling the dice. I mean, she's sitting here. She's at that point, and with so much pressure that's folding full corporations and billions of dollars, like the Star Wars franchise, over this woke crap. And she won't bend the knee to that degree
because
in this
she knows.
State as a senator, I give you have to think either she's given some broad permission by the system, or she is rolling the dice in a huge way because she sees where this is going, and that shows how brilliant and tenacious she is.
No, it's worse.
I'm just saying
she's been told where this is going. She knows where this is going. She's part of it going. She's U.S. freaking senator from Arizona. I think she married a guy finally, but she
did.
Get
out of here. She
Donna,
did.
She look and see Kyrsten Sinema. You know who she married to?
We're turning into People Magazine now.
Yeah, Kyrsten Sinema's husband or something. You know, because as a state legislator, it was to her advantage. She
get
goes, right, you know, who I got to go down on? What's her name? You know, what woman I got to date? What I got to do? Yeah, I'm bi. I remember Karen Johnson. She's a Mormon, conservative, well-respected Republican senator. And she comes to me and she goes, oh, well, you know, Kirsten, you know, she came out, you know, bisexual. And I go, ooh, that makes her even hotter. I go, I don't care. You know, that she did that just because she could. I mean, you know, whatever. All right, here, let me.
That's amazing. But she starts off with purple hair and those crazy glasses. And
okay, okay, okay.
Every
here we go.
Few years, she cleans up. Now, all of a sudden, she has a haircut. Her hair's not purple. She's changed her glasses.
Yeah, she
wears
like actually
professional. And now she's married a guy. Are you
okay, okay, okay. Kyrsten Sinema is married to a guy named Blake Dane from college. People's opinion on Democrat has been divided, empathizing with her and others, speculating her woeful journey, according to journal, blah, 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 blah. Let's see. Here's what you should know about her husband. This is if I, oh, it's an ex-husband now. Okay, okay, okay. She's got an ex-husband, you know. And, yeah, she always dresses well, and, you know, she's got kind of stylish, but she is communist.
Yes,
in the 90s, she was Green Party, socialist, Ralph Nader. I mean, and she became a Democrat so that she could get elected. Kyrsten Leah Sinema is an American politician currently serving as senior United States Senator from Arizona, blah, 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 blah. Born, yada, 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 who is her husband. Also known as the first openly bisexual member of Congress, has often marveled out her story of triumph of how she and her family had to live in an abandoned gas station for 3 years without water or electricity. I'm poor and from the drudges of yada, 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 yada. Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is that whatever serves her purpose, if she needs to You know, I'm telling you, you know, I don't know if she's I didn't get the impression, you know, if she has no empathy or not. It wouldn't surprise me, because the time that I've spent with her, she has said some pretty crazy stuff. And this is, if I had to nip it in the one thing, this is what she told me one time. When Hurricane Katrina had happened and our radio station, you know, Air America, of course, we, you know, because of great influence from, you know, Charles Goyette and myself, we're like, look, we can just do this. There's not a collective. We send it to some freaking central place of whatever. You just fill up a U-Haul and you take it to Louisiana and you say here and you're done. I go, you know, how hard is this? Oh, no, we got to collectivize and do and whatever. So Kyrsten Sinema, as a state legislator, she goes, all right, well, you guys put it in, you know, the RV, and then I'll drive it down to the Arizona Veterans Memorial Coliseum for the refugees that have been, you know, shipped there. And I'm going, why do you got to drive? I mean, just drive it. You know, the station, it's for the station. We're not here to support you. I mean, you know, we'll just take it down there. Let one of the freaking sales guys, who cares? Goes, no. Only I get to represent. I am the chosen one. I am the elected official. I'm, this whole thing is to serve her. And I'm like, whoa. So this whole thing, the station did all this is so that Kyrsten Sinema get a photo op. I'm going, and nobody else can do it. Or we can't just directly take it to PO. I'm going, okay, I get it. You know? And she was like, well, duh. Well, what the hell did you think was going on? And I'm like, all right. So later, when we had the just needed land in the plaza, Wesley Bowl in the park, that's right there by the Capitol, it was a privately funded big marble granite, whatever, monuments to the Bill of Rights. You had 10 of them, first to 10. And they were engraved and put in. All we wanted was the permission just to put them there. You know, Bliss. What was his name? Chris Bliss. Chris Bliss, stand-up comedian, used to open for Michael Jackson, been on Letterman. He's a really talented guy, juggler, all kinds of stuff. And he goes, when at the time they were saying that the Bill of Rights monuments they had at different states that was done by Cecil B. DeMille's for the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston, it was a big promotion of the Ten Commandments. They had these monuments that the studio would put whoever wanted them somewhere. Well, then they had a big thing, you know, over a decade ago that was, oh, you can't have church and state mixed and this being on, you know, government property of a Ten Commandment thing, I get rid of them, blah, blah, blah. Well, Chris Bliss in his stand-up routine, he goes, who cares? And this is from a progressive liberal guy. He's going, who cares? As long as you got a monument to the Bill of Rights, I mean, what's the difference? And then he found out something from us that he didn't know. There wasn't a single monument to the Bill of Rights anywhere in the United States of America. And he goes,
really?
What?
The entire United States.
The entire United States. Because it didn't what? Support the narrative. Okay? This is why. So he's like, well, that's bullshit. And it's called mybillofrights.org. He started, we were promoting it on Freedom's Phoenix, made a big deal about it. And all we needed, and he had private money lined up to do the monument. He did it in Texas and Iowa. It was started around the country, even moved to Austin to get it done in Texas. Well, in Arizona, where this started, we had a big, at the Improv, a big fundraiser and all that kind of stuff. Kyrsten Sinema gets up and she says, well, I support this. I guess to be able to get it up there, we got to include the Second Amendment one. She had to throw a stone at the Second Amendment. I'm like, you know, you backhand you, videotape, please. So what happened was, is that we needed sponsors to do it. Well, we wanted, of course, being Air America, they're progressive. They want somebody from the left. Well, Kyrsten Sinema, she, oh, yep, you know, I'll sign on to that bill. Well, then no way in hell that was going to get any kind of movement in a Republican-controlled Senate and House of Representatives. So Russell Pierce, president of the Senate at the time, did everything he could to kill that bill because he's like, hell no, it can't have a Democrat on their bill of rights. We ain't doing it. So we go, all right. So we went to Karen and I told him, I go, look, Russell, don't be a dick, you know, but he couldn't help himself because he's just that way. So Karen Johnson goes, I'll co-sponsor it. Absolutely. Now, Bill of Rights, you just want free, you'll just land next to a sidewalk to put a privately funded monument on you. Hell yeah. You know, oh, Kyrsten, yeah, whatever, don't care. So it was Karen Johnson, super conservative, and Kyrsten Sinema, ultra progressive. So you had two ends of the spectrum sponsoring this bill, and that's how it got passed. It goes in, it passes, they fund it, it goes on. It's a beautiful addition to Wesley Bowling Plaza with all the other monuments there. So I'm going, that's how that happened. And Kyrsten, you know, because she understood the percentage in it, what she'd get out of it. But she had to give a swipe on the Second Amendment because she's Kyrsten Sinema, okay? So all of this, if I've been talking to her and dealing with her, I had her on my radio show back in 03. She was the first with Soros-backed money of big, giant anti-war protests before the Iraq war even started down. I've known her for a long time, and it has been very clear to me that she's extremely intelligent, she's very motivated, and she's on team whatever the hell it is that put her there as U.S. freaking senator in Arizona. And she was on from the Green Party as an ardent socialist debating John Buttrick. And I think it was 96 or 2000, they had representatives from the Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Libertarian, whatever. And representing Harry Brown was retired federal judge John Buttrick now, did it versus for Ralph Nader was Kyrsten Sinema. And some of the stuff that she was saying, he's like, holy crap, ardent socialist, part of the agenda, part of the program, part of, you know, the narrative. She's been part of the chosen narrative from the beginning, and now she's U.S. Senator. And that is why I know her be one of the most dangerous people in this country toward what we're for. The purpose of government, defense of individual rights, which is so far from what she's advocating, I guarantee it. And but she knows that the future is not going to be, you know, it may be forwarded. It may got a lot more land grab of sustainable, whatever the hell that they got through this AOC stuff. But that's not the future of the Democratic Party. Pelosi is not the future of the Democratic Party. You watch Kyrsten Sinema. She's going to be running for president someday. I guarantee it. And you want to kiss everything goodbye? Watch this. And who is she going to attract? All of the little, you know, segments of I was poor. I'm, you know, go down on women, go down on men, everything.
So it's interesting. And it's just kind of just from the hip, you know, speculation. But it's interesting how Arizona is kind of a, you know, for some backwater little pissant state, Arizona, with only
because
a handful of
electoral votes. Because it's the nail that votes. Sticks up the most.
No. Exactly. And Arizona is, and I hate to use their term, but a purple state, you know, for their vernacular. And being such, it's a very good test bed in a way of what works. Because, you know, if the whole country is split, if this country is split down the middle, I mean, literally, our whole country is split between red states and blue states and the House versus the Senate and how many Republicans or Democrats in each House and Senate. I mean, we're just so split down the middle. In a way, you're not looking to Texas to see who the next Republican will be. In many ways, you're looking to places like Arizona, a purple state, to see what Republicans work and what Democrats work. After all, we have the home of John McCain.
Oh, I got to stop you. All that's bullshit.
Freedom Phoenix.
Red, purple, blue, all that is crap. It's what they can get away with. You know, it started, you know, for me, it was 92 with Arpaio. Then it comes Jim Napolitano. Are you freaking kidding me?
Ernie.
It's a selection.
Ernie, if you want to see, Ernie. Ernest, I'm talking like your mother here. If you're going to see what works, right, you start in a purple state. You want to see what works because and you're not going to go to Texas or California. I mean it might work in California, not the rest of the country. You go to a purple state and see what works. And I'm not saying that you and I agree with it. No. I'm talking about how the system will see it. They're like, well, how far right or left can we go and still win? The fact that we have an Arizona Republican
win
state,
what?
We have
what
two
do you mean,
Democrat
win?
Senators. We have two Democrat senators.
Okay, let me. You know, this is to the audience because it's just Frank's starting to drive me crazy again. This is not about the will of the people. It's about what they can convince the people their will was at the election box.
Same thing.
Is manipulated as hell. It's, you know, kind of, you know, gets to the same thing until it's not, because when people start to go like what's going on right now, having been screamed at for decades from me and others saying what you are living in is a lie. all of this is BS. I remember in 05-06 when the FBI came in and just took all the ballots. They just said, because the 04 election cycle, they were doing the same kind of audit stuff. Things were going on. They were finding, and all of a sudden, boom, here comes the, here comes the FBI, took all the ballots, and see if that copies this one. They took all the ballots and just took it away and said, no, you're not doing them, counting them, and it's not, and none yet, and you're not allowed. And you go, oh, okay. All right. And you'll never hear about it again. Why? Because it was going to challenge the narrative. And the narrative was, is that, oh, we're kind of going blue, being a purple. That was all bullshit. Because what I realized, there are a book called The Arizona Project, which was about Don Bowles, which is an investigative reporter for the Arizona Republic. His car got blown up back in the late 70s when I was in high school. And they have, all kinds of stories about that, do a movie, blah, 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 blah. But the point was, they did another thing. What's in it for me was kind of like 15 years later, another book with Derry Matera that you know, and all that came together to, you understood who was really in charge of this state. It goes to they, them, those, on up and name all kinds of names and who and the mob and everything else. And the whole thing comes down to what? That it was a selection, and that the Republican and Democratic parties are the same people that run Arizona. It is the mob and the gangs and the government interest and special interest and, you know, industrial, you know, incentives of those, they, them, those. And when you have in the early 90s, when the libertarians, we got together and started doing some ass whipping, when that happened, all of a sudden they're like, crap, we got to take care of Arizona. We got to push that nail back in, because we're out of 50 states and the nail's starting to go up. Which one do they hit? The one that's sticking up the most. Here comes Janet Napolitano as assistant attorney general to Janet Reno under the Clinton administration. And she's assistant attorney general in Arizona. And she's going after what? All the Viper militia, just making crap up. Even Ted Koppel on Nightline, you know, ABC News is going, hey, this isn't what they said it was. Ah, you're not with the narrative. Boom. He gets chastised.
Oh, really? I have to check that one out.
Oh, no. It was obvious. They knew that they were being lied to. But when they'd say anything about it, oh, you're not going with the narrative, you know?
You know?
And in fact, I just talked to Dean last night, one of the guys that did 5.5 years, you know, on this for conspiring to teach. And then she becomes attorney general. Then she becomes governor of Arizona. Then she becomes head of Homeland Security. How the hell do you think that happened? Who are these people? Purple state line.
No. I know, but Ernie, no, look, I was about to say, Janet Napolitano, and we won't have to do the whole story, but, you know, she wound up sucking up to Obama and basically backstabbed her best friend, supposedly, Hillary Clinton from the Rose Law Firm.
Because she did what she was told.
Either that or the narrative.
Do you think Napolitano, of all people, all of a sudden got a wild hair and decided to do what she wanted? Or the right thing, or something like that.
I get it. You know, I mean, and Janet Napolitano is the female governor in supposedly a sexist cowboy state. She was also apparently, I don't know if she was outed
Before that, you had Rose Moffer, the Democrat.
I mean, all I know is Napolitano.
And Jane Hull, you know, two female governors just in the previous decade.
No, I know. They're Republican. And of course, and Janet, of course, had a voice deeper than
Rose Moffer was Democrat.
And Janet Napolitano had a voice deeper than Vin Diesel's, for Christ's sake. We'll just leave it there. But the thing is you've got a whole different setup. You've got perhaps possibly lesbian female governors in a conservative cowboy state from the left. And then you have on the right, you have John McCain, the so-called maverick, who's sitting there doing all kinds of deals and sellouts, you know, to the Democrats. So this state has been a very mercurial and very interesting state because, you know, Texas is a cowboy state. California is a lefty state. Arizona really is this strange amalgam. It's a cowboy state at heart, but it's nestled and caught between lefty, you know, socialist California.
That is the narrative.
And New Mexico, not to mention Colorado changing. So Arizona, I get that that's the word of the day, like you know. I mean, I know it's the word of the day, like Pee Wee Herman here. I'm just, I get narrative. But
no, that's, you know, what they're trying to make you believe it is. It's a
Arizona
lie.
Arizona is in between. Arizona's been nestled, and you have a culture that's in its core cowboy Americana, but it's pocketed around by all the sides, not to mention Mexico and all the illegals coming up from north. So Arizona is an interesting test bed. It's like a microcosm of America at large.
No, I'll tell you what it is. They go to the people in the media and they say, oh, Arizona's gone purple from hardcore freaking Arizona red. It's gone purple because we got more immigrants. People from California. Oh, the Colorado influence in Mexico is blah, 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 which I call bullshit on from the beginning, because it was done because they could, because it was a selection process. I could see it early on in the late 70s when they took the election laws, you know, Title 16, threw it in the trash and totally rewrote it. And what they called it was the Anti-Communist Act. And what it was is that in there, one page banned Arizona politics from having the Communist Party. And that's how they got any and everybody to vote for it. Oh, you're not going to, you know, vote no against this anti-communist bill, are you? And they made it parties of the state. It was a Arizona Republican and Democratic, you know, Communist Party law. That's what it was. And that was all the 44 election laws that I challenged to the Ninth Circuit was on them doing it. I could see what they did, and it was a selection. And whatever they didn't do in election fraud, they did with what they're doing now with voter registration, how you get the vote, how often you get the vote, when you get the vote, who's in the primary and not. They changed everything. And after my lawsuit, they had to change the way the primaries were doing because they got caught. You know, so they're going. So it's just, it's so selective in how they, and they do it nationwide, and with early voting, with the computers they came in, and then they do a polling after the party themselves got the early ballot request forms that they started in 94. And if you did the survey and you said, yeah, vote for the guys you want, they would send you on to the Maricopa County elections that you get your early ballots. And if you didn't answer the survey right, they threw them in the trash. And we found them in the dumpster because we went dumpster diving because we had a consultant said, you know, these people that are squealing out of your parking lot and got all these bags of your dump, that's what they're doing. You don't do that. Let me show you how to do it. We go down there to the Republican Party. Sure as shit, there's all this stuff in there. And I'm going, we didn't even know what the hell we had until we figured out what was going on, because my counterpart, the Republican Party, invited me to come in and tour and showed me the fraud that they were doing. Showed me. And then he resigned because I'm going, look. This, I don't think I know. I know this has been purple my ass. When you fix the election process, you're going to see what's going to happen. It is going to go, you know, the pendulum's going to sprint back. And then when it's time to vote, because this time it matters, people will flood in. So that's all of this is why when I go back to Arizona, until somebody else changes my mind, I'm going to do a write-in for Secretary of State, because you have to generate the paper. And I have to get, I'm going to show, whoo, they ain't going to count. They're hell no, they want to show that there's Ernie, a stack of it.
Ernie, I have a question. This is, I want to say to the audience,
quit saying it. That's all BS. That's a narrative they're trying to get you to say, well, because of this criteria, because of illegal alien, because of California, because of, that's all just bullshit they're getting you to say.
So, Ernie, first off, I'm not disagreeing with you as much as you might think. I am, though, you know, trying to just take this measured from a certain perspective.
I'm done with measured. I'm done.
What I'm going to say next might seem a little unfair because that person's not on the air right now. So I want to be very clear. I'm not throwing stones or anything. It's a sincere question. And that is, I'm not doubting you about in any way about the corruption going on. For this audience that does not know, you know, I ran for Senate against John McCain in 2016, you know, predicting that Donald Trump would eventually be the primary winner, which he was, and all of this. And of course, Ernie helped in many ways with this. And anyway, that's a long story. I wound up going to the state Supreme Court over this as the John McCain campaign tried to stymie, or they did stymie us at the last minute, the last 5 minutes of the last day that they were able to contest it. They waited and threw this whole lawsuit at us to contest it.
Sounds like part of the selection process to me. Selection. Exactly. Wrong narrative. Can't have Frank up there talking about this. Wrong narrative.
I'm the wrong narrative, and the and for what it's worth, not that Ernie gives you know, care at all, but the federal judge here wound up saying that Dr. Frank Tambori, not that I'm trying to take credit for this because other people did got the signatures, but that my campaign wound up getting more signatures than any third party candidate in the history of the state of Arizona, and he actually publicly said that for whatever it's worth, which. Ernie's point of view, it's worth nothing because ultimately they still wound up giving it to John McCain and said, well, it's too late in the selection process to debate this issue, even though I had a point, even though I got more signatures than ever, because the John McCain Republicans wound up changing the rules as usual, that they had to get more signatures. And I really don't want to get into the whole detail with this. But anyway, it's an overall point. And actually, you know what? I just forgot my point I was trying to argue with you about after all that. Anyway, go ahead and tell me.
No, how this came about is there is a, you know, matter of fact, it was with Kirsten Sinema, you know, it was the Democrats. They, if you knew who to talk to, they go, you got a good quality libertarian. Hell yeah, we'll fund it. And I said, absolutely. But we got to be open about it on my show. None of this behind the scenes secret bullshit. How you get on the show. Tell me all about it. Yep. We got 60,000, 30,000, 100,000, whatever. We'll get signatures from Frank, put them on kind of. Did they really? Did they submarine it intentionally? Did the narrative, did they get told no, 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 no? It's not like they didn't have the money. It was they didn't want to inject that narrative. It's all about the narrative. You being on and pulling votes from McCain. So, Kirsten would get in that time or something, but I don't remember. It doesn't matter. You know, the point is that you can't count on any of these people to do anything they say unless it's to serve whatever narrative, whatever story, whatever mind screw that they're trying to get for not just that election, the next one, and the one after that. These people think generationally, and one thing that will screw up their crap is a bunch of hardcore libertarians going around the state in a plane or a love bus. Oh, yeah, and Bob got another plane, and going around the state, and I'm going, hey, Bob, think about running run again this time? He goes, oh, no, I'm thinking about it. He's run for Congress twice already. So I'm going, we'll go statewide. Woo!
Ernie, I'm going to show a little stone at your point there. And again, with the audience, I have the utmost respect for the person I'm going to mention, and I'm not trying to throw stones necessarily at them. But just to make a point about, like Ernie just said, that you know that libertarians and everybody knows, and that would be the person you mentioned earlier, Dr. Judge Buttrick, right? Who is a federal judge here from Arizona and now retired. A very good guy, very good patriot. We love him. Everyone on this whole show, I have a lot of respect for him. But at the same time, we had him on your show, on this show before the election. I think it was before of this last selection with Joe Biden.
You don't like Trump.
No, I know. He is not a Trump guy. But one of the questions that came up as I was trying to defend Trump to him, he was no fan of him. And of course, he's libertarian, and I'm sure Ernie can tell you the whole pedigree later. But you know, he's run for senator, governor.
No, he ran for governor in '94 and state rep in '98 or something. Right. And then they made him a judge. The governor appointed him to get him out of politics. That's what happened.
Oh, that was what I touche. So anyway, so he's a very respected person from Arizona and politically, and to his credit, you know, has more of a libertarian slant and runs libertarian. But when I
Harvard
asked
law
him,
grad, summa cum
Harvard
laude.
Harvard law, yeah. Absolutely. God bless Judge Buttrick, but full respect here. But, you know, I'm a Trump guy and he's definitely not, which kind of surprised me in many ways because the one divide that much of this audience has, which is why I think, you know, people love.
We got to make
think,
this the last story because we're running out of even our
that's
three-hour
fine.
Buffer
that, the people love the Ernie and Frank Tambori argument here is this thing with Trump. Like the rest of the country, Trump's divided with many people. And for many libertarians, they think Trump is still part of the man and the system. And they did not abolish the Federal Reserve and didn't bring all the troops home and all of that. And yet the other half of libertarians who are tired of the system being so corrupt, keeping out third parties, you know, to us, we love someone who's going to go in and destroy the system, which is why you've got the Alex Jones and the Frank Tamboris. And so anyway, this whole split we've talked about for many years, and nothing was more apparent
than Judge Buttrick and myself. And one of the things that I'd asked, since he's no Trump fan, was the issue of the election. And I asked him point blank on your show. I said, do you think, and of course, I think Ernie was like, had his mouth shut and taped from Donna, and, you know, behind the scenes. But I asked him, do you think that this election, that basically the election process is so corrupt that your vote does not matter? Because Ernie clearly thinks it doesn't matter at all, still voting. To me, it's corrupt, but it still works enough with scotch tape and popsicle sticks that Donald Trump was still president, which proves my point. And so that was an interesting debate or question I asked Judge Buttrick, who is a libertarian, hates Trump, who definitely understands from the wolf's den how hard or corrupt it is to run for office. And I asked him, and he said, no, he does not think it's that corrupt. He thinks the system still works. So I'm just pointing that out, Ernie, not to throw, you know, shade at you. And I'm not doubting. And trust me, I know it's corrupt. I'm not obtuse about it. But to the level that you talk about, you've got Judge Buttrick himself, who's there as a judge and run for office and a libertarian who does not think
that tells
that
you everything right there. He's a judge. The one thing that he and I'll tell you the history between John and I, when he ran for governor in 94, that was like a big deal. And I was Secretary of State. So it's like, you know, he and I around the state, and I was totally different. I mean, I was, you know, the rough cut of what rough on everything. And he's Mr. Polished, whatever. And so we weren't really, I mean, we appeared a lot together. Our signs were similar. We had, you know, that I was county chairman and everything. So it wasn't like, it wasn't, you know, like we were going up against each other or anything. We were running as a team, you know, mostly we were supporting his campaign. And of course I had my attention and so on. And then as still as county chair in 1998, when he ran for state legislature, and we had meetings and we said, okay, we're going to go for the hard press here. We had more money raised at the first reporting cycle than all the other candidates combined. And it scared the crap out of him. He even got endorsed by the Arizona Republic. You know, they were like, what the hell is going on? Because it was so obvious how heads and shoulders he was above everybody. It would just been so they just had to count on the selection process of the election, whatever the hell that was going on. So when we started the campaign and we had the meetings, and I said, look, we, you know, the elephant in the room here, I gotta make this point. I do not believe in the accuracy of the system. Do we all agree that I believe that? Yep. And I go, I think it's total bullshit. There is no way in hell they're going to let this go through, but I'll be a good doobie and act as if it does matter. Okay. We will campaign. We will do newspapers. We did newspapers. There was even another Republican running for something that did it with us because he was a good guy that just thought it was all corrupt too. And they did like a newspaper together. So it was like a Republican that was going against, I guess, a Democratic majority or kind of it was a really close legislative district that had almost equal numbers. So John Buttrick and the Republicans run against the two incumbent Democrats, as I remember. So we did that. Every signs, we were just super dicks about it. And I devoted an enormous amount under the guise that it was an honest election when I knew it wasn't. So John had a lot of respect and, you know, and we're good friends because he knew that I was acting as county chairman as if it mattered. And I did it because that's what he wanted. And that was what a lot of people that knew it was, we're going to go ahead and pretend as if it really mattered. Well, at the end of that, we kind of got a dose of a whole bunch of ways of stuff that happened and freaky deaky. Because at the same time, I was also running for Congress. When the first results came up in Congress, I was winning. I had 35-something% and three, whatever the hell it was. I was winning. And we all looked at each other and I go, well, that ain't going to last. All of a sudden, boom, the computers went down for 20 minutes and it came back and I wasn't. And I'm going, and we never talked about it again. I'm going, why would I make a big deal out of that? What are they going to say? You know, what are they going to do? What are we going to be able to do? I am operating under the guise that this is total bullshit. So I don't care. So That is what has maintained my sanity. That is why I'm in this race so long. That is why I focus on general public opinion. And that is why I'm going to do what I'm going to do in Arizona with this new understanding that if you're not part of the narrative of even countries that they want to go socialist, they encourage them to be socialist. They do everything socialist because they don't want economic competition, because they know that private property rights and free individuals are massively productive, and they have a middle class that you can't take over as easily. Well, they've done that across the planet, and now they're coming home to do it here. And I feel it, and that's how I'm going to be acting. Well, we got to end it on that because we ran out of time. But even though we went extra, oh, can we get a second hour out of you, Frank? Well, it's been three. So, you know, now I want to hear you whining. Did I lose you? It's a good time to lose Frank.
No. I'm there. So I just want to thank you. And I want to end on one last point. I'll take this up on the next argument session next week. I just wanted to make one quick plug. And that is a new website or an app I'd like you guys all to check out. No, I don't have any. I don't have no money in this at all. Tim Pool was talking about it. Now it's going a little more mainstream. It's an app called Ground News, like on the ground. Ground News. Guys, check it out. And maybe if Ernie likes it, he'll put it up on the site. So it's an app. And what it's interesting, Tim Pool loves this thing now. And what it is it takes a look at whatever news is out there. Let's say right now, just this morning, the Supreme Court 7-2 shot down the objections to Obamacare regarding the individual mandate. Okay. That's a story, right? That should be news. We talked earlier today in the show about what is news and who defines, should we say the word of the day, Pee Wee Herman? The narrative, as Ernie likes. So therefore, this is like the narrative. But if you check it out, Ernie, definitely download it. And it'll show you whatever the news of the day is.
No, I got to totally agree to everything. I totally agree to totally agree. Is it one of those apps?
Oh, come on, Ernie. Yeah. You just say yes if you want to do it. Nah. No, don't do it. The thing is, it's an app, and it's a news feed app. But what's really unique about it is that – wait, hold on, Ernie, before your cynicism kicks in as usual. So what happens is it'll, let's say, go over all the different news events, and it throws everything at the system. But what it does is it basically, I'm trying to explain this quickly here, it puts it out of who's covering it. You see, right now, if the news comes, it used to be when news came out, you know, it's raining, all news talked about Walter Cronkite, Ted Koppel, we all knew that it was raining. Nowadays, some news event happens, whatever it might be, you know, the Seattle destruction in the cities. Well, Fox News and many of our sites and Freedom Phoenix will talk about it, but MSNBC won't even talk about it, right? So this is the breakdown of news, and it's not even news anymore. It's just propaganda on all sides, and you've got this issue. So what the groundnews.com or Ground News app does is it'll take whatever news is being talked about, it'll report it, but you can determine and see at one glance which news sources are talking about it. So it rates far left, moderate left, you know, like middle, mid, you know, the middle left, you know, then overall mid, and then you've got, you know, mid right, and then right, which is Fox News, and then far right, which maybe they put, I don't know, whatever they put on there. So you see them all graphed. So what's interesting about it is, if let's say it says it's raining, you can check out what the far left is saying about it versus the far right and the midstream, which is something that I do on my own anyway. I never had
an app to do it for me. And I guarantee there's not the libertarian saying, you're still voting?
Well, I mean, touche, maybe, perhaps to a certain degree.
The narrative is the argument. It's a left-right. It's in the system. It's go vote. Rock the vote. Do it. You got to have a voice. You're never going to get the voluntarist. It's just more programming.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, I mean, the far right, and I hate to call it that, but in some ways that is almost the libertarian. And in a strange way, it's the far right and the far left that both
consider themselves libertarian now. So in a way, it's like it's a wraparound. It's almost like the two side extremes are coming together on the other set.
They're just
side
jumping
the
in front of a parade. Anyway, I get it. Go ahead. We gotta stop it. Go ahead. Right. And, you know, anyway, give out, so what's the app? Where do you go?
It's called Ground News. Ground News, and it's cheap, easy. There's nothing. There's no cost. And what's interesting about it too is you can see which stories.
It's free, right?
It's free. It's free. Yeah,
it's free.
That's right. So the point is you can see, you know, very quickly which stories everyone is covering and which stories one side is covering versus the other. And as much as most of this audience does not give a crap what the left says, one of the secrets that I've had when I debate Ernie and others with this stuff is you have to listen to what the other side says, as disgusting as it might be and blood pressure inducing. But you need to often understand how they see the world to understand yourself.
Graham Phoenix is a wide radar screen. I put up a lot of that stuff, and it's all the same thing. The left, the right, is how they're going to get you to participate in your own enslavement. You have to go do jury duty, but gosh darn it, you're going to do what the hell the judge tells you, and if you know otherwise, you're dismissed. I mean, the entire freaking country's like that on everything. You know, you have to be inside the box at the
I think the importance is, and I'm not saying that the audience of this show that doesn't get it yet, but I think to be able to start to see the breakdown, the fact that a news like an earthquake happens, and you can, and for the average person to see with one app in one view how it's being reported or not reported on all sides, I think is very enlightening for a lot of people all at once. So anyway, check it out if you'd like. Narrative. All right, buddy.
All right. Thanks for coming on. It was a good discussion today. And, you know, damn, you know, and I thought,
wait, no
commercial interruptions.
No commercials. And I can't wait for the 4th of July show. It's going to be a good one.
All right, brother. Talk to you later. Bye. Love you, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye.